Blog Talk Radio.
Caller from 917, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Good evening again.
Your name, where you calling from?
I'm calling from Brooklyn.
Hello, Lahini from Brooklyn. I'm sure you have all kinds of ideas.
Well, what I was thinking this morning is that I want to have my own Blog Talk Radio so I can speak on the issues of black women, because we cannot expect the men to do all the work. So,
very nice to hear.
That's what I want to do. I'm an author, and I need this platform. It was you who actually put me on when I found you out, and I listened to your show, and I fell in love with your show. So I'm ready to do my own Blog Talk Radio now. So that will be my contribution to the mass, because it's time that we really learn the tactics of defense. Black power has a defense that has nothing to do with religion, that has nothing to do with Jesus, because the saying is that what men do to men, God only laughs. So while you're letting someone else misuse you and you're thinking God will let them have some sort of justice that God will serve, but God is only laughing because you did not play your role as a rightful human, as an honorable human with skin on its body and flesh and bones and blood running through it that should boil at times when it is insulted. So that will be my contribution. I don't want to take too much of your time. Thank you.
Well, definitely. If you need any assistance with that or any advice, let me or anybody else know, and we can definitely help you out.
I do need your help, and I will let you know. Thank you.
You take care. Black first, as always. The telephone lines are now open. The number is 646-787-1933. 646-787-1933 is your personal access code to the Black Radio program in existence, the only one of kind on planet Earth today, the only sole, solitary, super fortress of intelligent black thought that talks about the things that nobody else does because nobody else can. We're knocking here sounding like we just finished hitting the bong and trying to figure out which way in life we're going to go. That's what makes us different. If you want to speak to me for the longest period of time, the reason that I was able to give her 20 minutes yesterday was because she called in early. So if you want to have the most time to be able to talk to me, I suggest you call in early. But today, I want to talk to those of you who have a plan and have an idea, or at least those of you who understand, hey, let's go ahead and see about discussing this, because this is what we need to do. This is the only place that is calling you and saying, I want to talk to you about that. Let's talk about it. Caller from the 480, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, how's it going, Jason? This is Chris from Detroit. Living in Phoenix. I was calling today, listening to the broadcast, and you're right. A lot of everything you said is correct. You know, a lot of us, most of us, have never been challenged or even understand what leadership is. Economics is something that we are not taught in our schools. We have been taught to be the subservient class, the worker bee class. You know, from our parents are workers, you know, go to school and get a job, you know, while other schools, white kids, you know, in their colleges are reinventing the wheel. You know, it was a college kid made Facebook, and now you can't think of anything bigger, you know. And from listening to you, I have had time to self-reflect and realize what a terrible job I've done and how I've been walking through life blind and just weak. And, you know, I just want to, you know, say thank you, man. I mean, I'm out here in Phoenix. It's a very small black population. And the one thing that's universal is black plight. You know, the problems that I was leaving in Detroit are still here, of course, on a much smaller level, but, you know, it's that same story no matter where we go in America. And, you know, there was a time where I'm like, well, hell, we got to get out of here. You know, maybe Africa's our only choice. But, you know, we're owed something here, and we deserve it to ourselves to make something here. You know, I can't remember where the interview was, but you know, you made all the points why going back to Africa at this point is ridiculous. The language barriers, the cultural barriers, you know, if you can't get it here, what makes you think you're going to get it there? And, you know, again, I just called in just to, you know, like you said, I've learned so much and, you know, want to applaud you.
Well, let me find out here. Can you remind us all again how old you are?
I'm 33.
33 years old. And you say that you left Detroit, you went to Phoenix, and essentially the black community in Detroit looks like the one in Phoenix.
Yeah, as far as the plight and the problems, yeah, the bastard baby makers, the murders, the drug, yeah, it's identical. Just on a baby scale here, but as far as, you know, it's still, you go to any all-black neighborhood, for the most part, it's the worst neighborhood in the city, and you have people perpetuating that cycle of destruction. So, yeah, it's identical.
How many of black men that you have met feel the same way as you?
None. Because instead of chasing panties, instead of chasing power, they're chasing panties. You know, this is a very, when I say the men want to be with non-black women, you know, as far as like an identity, because the city is fairly new, this black population is fairly new. It doesn't have a black culture, you know, and they could care less about building or, you know, anything. You know, amongst my friends, I'm known as Sharif from Menace Society because I'm always talking that stuff. So, yeah, nobody, no one.
Now, do you have any non-black friends out there in Phoenix?
I would say I wouldn't call them friends because they're my competition, and they openly compete. You know, I say we have an uneasy alliance. But you know, I have some Mexican friends. You know, guys that I know that, you know, but you know, they're the competition. You know, they're for immigration, and I had a conversation with one of them like 2 weeks ago, and he was, you know, complaining about immigration, and I told him I'm not for it. You know, immigration has never done anything good for black people. The last time immigrants came over here, they completely displaced us. We were the only skilled workers in America. And white supremacy says I'd rather train a white man than hire a skilled black one. So, no, you know, and we were number two then, and now we're number three. It's not getting any better. So, no, I'm not for it. So we went back and forth, but you know, when it comes to their racial, anything all black scares everybody, even black people. So when I talk about black stuff, they look at it as being hostile, you know, as if it's, you know, we have no right to stick together. But when it comes to Mexicans and, you know, Spanish speakers, you know, they're all for that closed fist unity, you know, and it's just amazing when you're under a whole new way of thinking, you know, how you see the world and the things you hear, you process it differently.
Do you see any of them, the non-black people that you know, in your age group, do you see them making moves and building out there?
Yeah, this is a Mexican stronghold. Yeah, the ones I know, they work for the fathers in landscaping, they sell tacos of some sort, you know. They're insulated and isolated with their language, you know. They're building. You know, but see, the thing for them is it's second nature. Having your own, doing your own thing, it's no big deal to them. That was what they were told in the cradle. You know what I'm saying? And even the talk of it being a black version of that, you know, it's met with, you know, gunfire.
And isn't it amazing? You will get no resistance. I don't care how many strip clubs you go to. You will not get any resistance from anybody to the idea of opening up a black strip club. You will not get any resistance from anybody about the idea of opening up a black dance club. Things where your women can be exploited and your men and your children can sit with mindless diversions. Black people never argue with you over that. It's only something productive, useful that you need. That is going to be met with absolute resistance every single time. We have conditioned ourselves now. This isn't even something that came from the outside. we have now conditioned ourselves to be desirous to see those kind of things. That our idea of economic development, the black idea of economic development, is a strip club or a dance joint. That's our idea of it. And for white folk, for non-black people, they see that as just one part of, and they just see it as that as a minor corner of an overall grand scheme of things. We see that as an industry and can't figure out why we have the situation going on. We do. Crazy.
But the thing, Jason, I'm sorry, but the thing that, like, for example, I was trying to turn some of my friends on to the Dr. Claude Anderson's book, Powernomics. I actually gave one of them, you know, the book to read, and midway through he said he couldn't finish it because he didn't understand why we can't help everyone. Why, how can we can't be inclusive? You know, he says to isolate ourselves is acting like white people, and we can embrace everyone, you know. And it's that thought process,
wow,
that idea, and it's poisonous, you know. Black people, I mean
so what you're telling me is that he read the work of Dr. Claude Anderson, simply talking about economics as a person. He read the work of Dr. Claude Anderson, and as a black person, he thought that he was listening to some isolationist mindset, and he immediately started comparing it to the worst elements of racist white society? Really?
Listen, he read Dr. Claude Anderson's book, and it turned his stomach. Black people hate anything black. And, you know, of course, we're not friends. We don't see eye to eye on anything after that, because if he thinks that we're not worthy of our own, he thinks that it's okay that we're lumped into this group of minorities, that we get to share our legacy, we get to share our pain with any idiot that comes off the boat. He thinks that's fine. Like, the civil rights is supposed to cover everybody, you know, and not just us, you know, completely disrespecting our legacy here. You know, no one else worked for free. No one else built this country, you know. And when I tell him, he brings up all the Native Americans had their country stolen. I'm like, they had slaves too. They're just as guilty. They profited from our misery just like anyone else. And like Dr. Carl Anderson said, it couldn't even exist without their cooperation. You know, but, yeah, it's just disgusting, you know. Single mothers, you know, it just proves we are the living proof that women are not supposed to be heads of households because this is what they produce, you know, and it's rampant. It's epidemic in our neighborhoods. We don't have communities. We have neighborhoods.
I mean, could you imagine him living in the barrio and talking like that? Jewish ghetto. And there's a reason why now you know I make that distinction. Or could you imagine, I mean, I know you're from Detroit, but I don't know if you know about in New York, the Five Points. And everybody who lives in New York, you all know the Five Points, which, because that's the hood today. But back when the Five Points was Irish and an Italian, could you imagine him living in the Five Points and saying something like that? Brother, that's a breakdown in societal discipline. When he gets up in the morning saying, my goal today is to work for the interests of everybody except people who look like that, and he's looking in the mirror with so much hate and rancor and venom that he can't stand when he sees in the mirror, I hate you so much, I am here to destabilize you. Brother, that is white. That is a black white supremacist. That is a black Klansman. Not the person who sits there shouting, nigger, 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 nigger. The one who looks at black people and says, no, no, empowerment is for everybody else except you. Not going to call you a nigger. Don't have to. Don't you understand that that's racism? For all of you out there who don't understand the true definition of racism, racism is a group phenomenon. It is when one group uses their money, power, and influence to prevent another group from having money, power, and influence. And he sat there and read about a plan for black people to have money, power, and influence. And he just closed it and said, I don't like the sound of this. Well, yes, everybody else I understand, yes, but I don't know. I don't like the sound of this. No, no. What do you mean black empowerment? Well, yeah, I mean, white folks say it every day, and the Asians say it every day, and the Mexicans say it every day. Yeah, I get that, but I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about you people. I'm worried that you are getting too powerful. Even though we are the only group who has no power, we have light years to go before we get equal, much less past anybody else. And he's saying, yes, you're flat with your backs on the ground, and I'm okay with it. I'm fine with it. Because he sees himself as above you. He sees himself as above all the rest of you. And that's why the idea of the scares him. That's why the Clarence Thomases and the Herman Cains join the Republican Party. Because as long as there are only a few black people, by default, you have power. But there's many of you, well, you're not so special anymore. At least you have to work extra hard to be special. He ain't trying to do that. He's the kind of black fella who will go into a club full of nothing but non-black people, and he has never been so happy before in his life. Tell me I'm wrong.
Jason, his biggest fear, when he reads all this black, he thinks that'll interfere with his access to non-black women. You know what I mean? Yes. He absolutely despises black women. And it's not from a sense of looking at the numbers, the poor, you know, none of that. It's just that being black is disgusting to him. You know what I mean? It's not that, oh, the age rate, or, hey, they always, you know, they all have children at this age group. You know, none of that. Nothing like that. It's just that, you know, black, the nose, the lips, the color, the hair, disgusting. You know, and like I said, you know, I don't usually try to talk politics with any of my friends because, you know, for the most part, that's a divisive issue. And I'm unmoving on where I stand on things that, you know, it's cost me a lot. And, you know, I'm better off without having him. But, yeah, it was disgusting, you know, that his whole thing was, oh, man, what's up with this? You know, anything black, he takes as he's offended, and he takes as hostility. And his whole universe is getting laid, and how many non-black women he can bed, and it was terrible.
And he's not building anything.
Nothing. No, the nerve of it is that he does think he's better than black people because of who he sleeps with, and all he is an orderly. You know what I'm saying? The nerve of white supremacy and how you can be indoctrinated and succumb to it is disgusting.
I mean, it doesn't take much to buy a black man off. It doesn't take much at all. What you just said, he's just an orderly. And that little bit of acceptance and the pat on the head, brother, he has been waiting and giddy and chomping at the bit and licking his lips his whole life to get here. That's it. He has arrived. He has made it to the promised land. And that's it. He's done. He is done. And he's expressing it every time he talks to you, his rancor and his venom for you, that the only thing that truly scares him is the idea that we as black people could catch up and then the bar gets raised. Because fellas like him, I mean, you've seen this before. And every black man in the chat room is over his 30s. The older in your 20s might not have seen it yet. But for those of you in your 30s, you know what it's like. I mean, let's just be real. When you walk into one of those honk-tonk clubs or whatever, I mean, you know, you've always got some black males or black females. They love going to the whitest, most redneck bar in town. They love going to the place that has zero black people in it. And I'm not talking about because it's a classy place. It'll be the dirtiest, dingiest thing, worse than the most hole-in-the-wall black place you've ever been. And they just love it. They will get into a fist fight with people in there. They will get into a fight with everyone in there to go there. And as black males, they understand that there's only a certain amount of non-black males available. So they know that if they can meet a non-black female who's looking to test her waters, that that increases the odds in his favor. He's not trying to pick up every female in the club. They're all sitting up here spitting in his face. He's looking for that one. Because, you see, if he were in a group of black females, they would be actually asking him for his credentials. He's looking for a non-black female for whom him just walking in the room is the credential. And that's the way the game works. That's the way it works, and that's why he's doing that. But you know what? You leave him where he is. His Zimmerman is coming. I'll let you have the last word, bro.
Last word is black first, Jason.
One more thing, because I really liked what you said there before. What was your name again?
Chris.
All right, Chris, because I really liked what you said before about anything all black scares people, including black people. And definitely I wanted to give you recognition for that. And thank you very much for joining us, brother. That was a very good quote that he gave us here. I think I'm going to post that up. Caller from the 954, you're on live on the Black Channel.
Hey, what's going on?
What's your Hello? Name? Where are you calling from?
I'm Dion. I'm calling out of Florida.
What's on your mind, black man?
Oh, no, I just want to say, man, I really appreciate the show. I really admire it, and it's definitely different. It's more what the black society definitely needs to hear at this time. And it's funny, you see a lot of things that I say myself to other people.
And how is that received?
Oh, man, it's 50-50. But one thing I've learned about brothers, most of them don't give a shit if you pardon my language. I mean, just like the last gentleman who was talking about, they're more concerned about sex and sneakers and shoes and nothing about politics. Don't really care to know anything about
why
politics.
Do you think there's this overriding? Why do you think there's this overriding, overwhelming fixation with sex among black males?
You know what? When I was growing up, dude, it's funny you say that. When I was growing up, that's how a lot of the other males used to talk. You know, the locker room talk, as I would like to call it. And I think what it is, it's one of those things, you know, it's picked up from generation to generation. It's constantly being daisy chained from each generation. But luckily for me, I wasn't raised, you know, I went to a predominantly black school. I am black. But, you know, I am pro-black, but my family is all professional. And, you know, more so, I'm more, compared to my family, more of what you would call an oddball. You know, where everybody has at least a master's, here I am with just associate's degree.
And Hello? You're not fixated on it?
No, I'm not fixated on it. But it's just I find it to be interesting, you know, when I talk to other brothers, you know, from around places where I hang out at or attend to, they have a tendency, you know, when we're talking about, if I bring up politics, it's more like, and I'm, quote, dude, if it ain't about pussy, don't talk about it. You know, literally. You know, that seems like to be more like the Florida impression when it comes from brothers. But I've also
noticed
that you do
have to be for that.
Huh?
Do you know how weak a person has to be to say something like that?
How old they have to be?
No, how weak. How weak a person has to be to say something like that.
Well, yeah, I understand that, you know. I understand, you know, you do have to be weak. In many cases, that's, I like to call it the lower form of thinking, you know, or what you would call the reptilian thinking, so to speak, you know, where you think more along the lines of, you know, the basic instincts of human life.
Food, water, sex. I mean,
exactly.
That is a person who has failed to evolve. Forget intelligence. Dude, you failed to evolve. Really, you have.
Are you referring to me?
No, not you personally.
Oh, okay.
Not you personally. But when a person is a grown man in a country where everybody is competing for wealth and influence, and he is coming up and fabricating and initiating every excuse that he can to focus on sex, that shows you how weak he is. You have never, ever, in the 5 years I've been broadcasting, I have never, ever, not even once, tried to compare myself or what I can do with females sexually. I don't do any, I've never done a sexual broadcast on this broadcast ever. I've never done a program about sex. I never do that. And even when I talk about females or male-female relations, I always bring it back to money, power, and influence. I always do. I can't even sit up here and pretend to be able to talk about that. It all comes back to money, power, and influence to me. That's why you don't have a bunch of females out there saying TBA was hitting on me, because that's not what drives me.
I don't see
this as my opportunity to cobble together all the sex partners I can handle across the United States. Because even if I did, that's not power. Not in my world, it isn't. Sex is a basic biological function. It's not power. But too many black males, because they are so weak and are so helpless, have transcribed sexual power to be the same as real power. And it's not.
That's so true. I think what it is really a substitution for... I think it's more of a substitution for not being willing to deal with the real role of life. And it's, you know, it's funny because later on in life, I'm 34 now, but it wasn't until I was like 28 until I realized, you know, the real, I like to call it the real game of life, where it's really about power, you know, and when you're dealing with white males, it's about power. And that's something, it took me a while to just figure out, you know, growing up from a single parent. Coming from a single mother, you know, these things are not taught to you. And I think that's one of the biggest things that's happened in the black community, is that the separation of the male from the female, so to speak, has created this one-sided logic or this one-sided understanding of the world, you know. And sometimes it does, like I like to say, sometimes it's causing a lot of the males to mature later in life, you know, for those who do follow along, you know, try to follow some sort of blueprint to their lives, you know. But one thing I realized that when it comes down to dealing with white males, it's about power, and even white females, it's about control. And many of them will not relinquish control of anything for anyone, and they understand those things, you know. It's like for them, it's like if you give up power, it's like giving up rights. It's like giving up rights to your own existence. And that's something that I find so sad about us, you know, especially even black women, even educated black women. It seems that we have been conditioned to have more of a slave mentality. And even when you're even in the workplace, you know, it's like I say this, I dictate, you follow my instructions.
That's the reason that white males as a group, for the ones who did, when they had a choice between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, they chose Barack Obama because they understood that empowering Hillary Clinton would have, in effect, been destabilizing their own household. They know that the Negro is going to be a one-hit wonder. They know that. They know full damn well that there is not another Barack Obama waiting in the wings. There isn't. Tim Scott?
Let alone are they going to allow there to be another one. They fix that. They plugged that hole up a long time ago.
I mean, Jesse Jackson Jr., come on. I mean, Obama got elected, Jesse Jackson Jr. got indicted.
Exactly.
I mean, Tim Scott, come on, let's get it real. Herman Cain, ha ha, another one waiting in the wings. And that was why it was okay to empower this one. He's not a threat. If we had empowered Hillary, it's all downhill from here. Why? Because Hillary is talking about woman power. Barack Obama ain't talking about black power. He's talking about how can I empower y'all. Barack Obama surrounded himself with as many white men as he could.
And here's another thing, if you don't mind me to interrupt. Here's a terminology I think we should coin: the universal Negro. To your previous conversation with the other gentleman, where you do have a lot of blacks, I've noticed, too, in professional settings, they're always about, I speak for everybody type mentality. Well, I do this for everyone, you know, and don't realize that everyone doesn't include you in their choice of selection of doing things, you know. I like to just call them the universal Negro.
And that's a long-standing term. We'll get into that document. Well,
that.
Oh, yes, that's a long-standing term. Universal Negro, universality was the name for integration before the name became integration. Universality.
Okay.
We'll get into that in my documentary as well. But, I mean, it just comes to show you that, yeah, brother, that's been circulating for a while, and everybody wants in on it. The truth is that white supremacy doesn't have to make black men sell out. Most black males are looking for the opportunity to do so. You just haven't named their price yet.
I think what it is, really, Jason, in many cases, I don't think we know any better. Because the reason why I say that is that if you look through history, if we just took a small stroll down history, you would notice that many of us at one point, we did understand about being male and males and being dominant, or at least having something, or at least have the idea to dominate something. We don't have that anymore now, I've noticed.
Most black males are scared.
I don't even think they're really scared. I think that they just have come to the conclusion that I think that we have just been conditioned, like I said, courtesy of just the lack of any real male examples, strong male examples to go by. I mean, think of, if you can name one live male example right now, I bet you can't do it. I'm just sure of that. And the thing about it is
one live male example of what exactly?
Of learning how to be dominant, learning how to be sufficient, self-sufficient. You know, like I've noticed that, like, let's say if all hell broke loose tomorrow, let's say if the economy collapsed, blacks would probably be the first people to die off, because we don't have any farmland to do anything with. You know, I mean, if we needed a house built, how many of us really know how to build a house at this point? I mean, yes, you may have a few contractors, but not as many as you should have.
Well, I'll go beyond that, though,
brother. I mean, when it comes down to industrial...
What you just said about if all hell broke loose, if a race war broke out tomorrow, you said how many black people would know how to build a house? I will go further than that. How many black people would be able to take a house?
Take a house? Is that what you said?
Yes. How many black people would even be able to take a house?
Well, to be funny to you, I don't think that would even cross the idea of many.
Now, that's the real question is that, you know, it's one thing if a person doesn't know how to grow food. It's another thing if that person, after all these years and all these statistics and headlining the 6 o'clock news, and you weren't even able, you could do all that stuff, but you weren't even able to take food at that point. You didn't even,
mm-hmm.
Now that the world is on guard against you, you don't even have the means to take anything. You couldn't even snatch it out of their hands if you needed to.
That's true. That's very true. You were saying?
People don't like to talk about this. They don't like to talk about this at all because they want to believe that we are in the position that we're in because we desire to be, and to a certain extent that's true. But it's not that we desire to be impoverished, it's that we have grown accustomed to being weak. And they think we can turn it on and off like a switch, and it doesn't work that way.
True. I can agree. But I think, the real problem is that we as males have forgotten how to be males. I'm not saying that I'm not saying that I don't know how to be a male and what it takes to be a man, but I'm just saying that overall the collective thinking of many of us is not about being a man. It's really about, like the last caller said, you know, it's about get a job, get an education so you can get a good job. You know, it's not get an education and create your own job, or get an education and figure out a way to develop your own wealth. You know, I mean, luckily for me, like I said before, I come from a good family. And, I mean, it's funny, my grandfather used to always preach to us, you know, to make sure that you're able to do something for yourself. If you work for someone 8 hours, you need to work for yourself as well as 8 hours, too, at some point. But whatever you do, you should be able to develop something for self. Many of us don't think like that. And in many cases, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why I believe that we are the way we are, you know, be it male and female. in the black culture.
Well, I want to ask you something here. I want to ask you a direct question because this is the place that does that. You mentioned earlier that you said, you know, not myself, but you know, most black men don't know how to be men. Why did you exclude yourself from that? How do you know that you're not one of them?
Well, the thing is, I'm not going to say I will say I used to be one of them. But like
how
I
do
said,
you know
it
you're not the old one?
Because I know better now.
Now, it's one thing to know better. It's not what you know. It's what you can prove, you know. So, I mean,
That's true. Very true.
How do you know that you're not still one of them?
Well, I'm pretty sure in some details I may be one of them. But what I was trying to get across, Jason, was that
No, let me explain something here, okay? I'm not beating up on you either. This is something I want everybody to understand though. Because we get into trouble a lot of time as black folk because we think we know things. I mean, I thought I understood black economic empowerment until I went to go speak with Dr. Claude Anderson. And even after leaving him, I was like, well, some things he knows, some things he doesn't. And it took several months later of going over the footage over and over and over again before I realized, oh, my God, this man, he understood it on a level that I didn't, because I started digging into it myself, and I was trying to get down to what the fundamental rules were, and I was like, that old man's got it. He's got it at a level that I didn't understand at this level, but now I do, and he was absolutely correct. I thought I understood it, but I didn't. So that's why I'm asking, because, I mean, look, you're microcosmic, okay? And I'm not disputing anything you're saying or whatever. What I'm saying is that everybody who's sitting in jail, I mean, how do we define who is a law-abiding citizen? By everybody who hasn't broken the law yet? By everybody who hasn't committed a crime? By everybody who isn't currently committing a crime? Or by everybody who knows what the laws are and thus know what a crime is? Because everybody
sitting in jail
understood what crime was before they got arrested. They understood it, but that didn't make them a law-abiding citizen.
I understand what you're saying. I can say that I don't know. But I say that it's like anybody else, like you yourself, you always leave yourself room for improvement. Just the same way you didn't understand economics once. You understood an idea of economics. You may have understood some of economics, but you never understood it as in depth as maybe the other person. Well, I think that's part of just being a human, is that you're always constantly looking to learn more. I think one of the biggest damaging things that many people do have a bad tendency of thinking that they know everything they need to know, and they just stop being willing to learn anything. That's dangerous. But I will say that, yeah, I can. I guess the best way to answer your question would be to say that I've learned a little bit better to improve on being a better man than being a lesser man.
I think that's a good way of putting it. I don't think I've ever said that I'm a real man or anything like that. I don't think I've ever even said anything like that. But I think what you just said is a very, very good way of putting it. I'm a better man. I think it's a good way of putting it. I think everybody can benefit from understanding that phraseology of it. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Black first, brother.
Thank you very much for joining us here. This is the blackchannel.net radio. I am your host, the Black Authority, as always. We're taking your phone calls here tonight, and definitely, as usual, I don't have topics per se, but whatever is on your mind, I can discuss that with you here. But I was mentioning here before about when he was talking about being a man and whatnot, part of being a man is having the drive and motivation to make things happen. And if you're interested in making things happen, this is your opportunity in particular. I'd like to hear from you about that. So you're looking for somebody who's interested in that. You found Kim Souls. Caller from the 262, you're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from the 262, last time, you're on live with the Black Channel. Okay, caller from 262 has been abducted. If anyone sees them out there careening wildly down the freeway, please contact the authorities. Not me. Contact somebody other than me. Caller from the 951, you're on Live with the Black Channel.
Good evening, Jason. This is Mona Lachey.
Yes, I knew.
How are you?
Black first, sister.
Black first, brother. I want to talk about fear.
Oh, good, because there are a lot of scared people out there right now. Some of them completely through the fault of their own. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on fear.
I believe that fear will stop you from anything. And that is the reason why I think African-American men and women do not own businesses. And I have to piggyback after what your last caller said about voluntarily being slaves. We sit and we wait for the white man to tell us what we are qualified to do as a job. And then they tell us what wage that they will give us for said job. And there is a difference between entrepreneurship and working for someone. And that difference instills fear in people.
You work in the cosmetics industry out there in California, so you are sitting in the belly of the beast.
Yes.
Why is it microcosm there? What is it? Because you own your own place. Now, we don't want to say that to everybody else. Mona's got her own, is self-employed. What is it that is preventing black people in California, where you are, what is preventing them from taking over the hair care industry out there again?
Again, I say fear. I work in a hair salon with both male and female, and they call me the Black Power. So I'm always talking about black empowerment. And every time I suggest something, they say,
okay, I don't know if you're driving through a tunnel out there or not, but your phones break up on you. See if you can try that again.
I'm sorry.
Okay, the track phone people are killing this year, apparently. I'm not sure what's going on there. You were doing good at first, and then the people with the tinfoil must have got on top of your house or something. Because it started breaking up on you here real bad.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, because she can hear me just fine. You're just not. I don't know if you can hear me fine or not, but it's breaking up on your side when it starts talking there again. So, but I myself, having looked into those things, I found there are more than a few places out there in California, for example, where black folk, you know, some of the black hair care places. For selling the tools, that is, for selling equipment and supplies for black hair care, they do it for cheaper than the Asians are, and yet they don't have the same patronage from black hair salons that the Asians do. And that's the kind of thing right there that I consider to be absolutely inexcusable. If you are a black hair salon, it should be criminal that you are not buying your supplies from a black hair care supply. I would just consider that to be absolute criminal, because it's not like you don't have them out there.
And you're absolutely correct there. Can you hear me now?
Go ahead.
You're absolutely correct. There was a company called Kazuri that manufactured all the cream combs, and I they were on their pocket.
Okay, Mona. I'm not sure what's going on there. You're doing okay for a minute, and then they start jumping it there for you. I'm going to see if I can give you a few minutes maybe to see if you can get in a better position or something here. I'll try you back here in a few minutes. But now, Kazuri, I know the company she's talking about with them, and I don't know if they're even still in business, to be totally honest. I don't know if they are, or if they are, or if they're not. If they aren't, that would be a shame, because that means that we gave up something in the modern era. That would be absolutely criminal if we did something like that willingly. But that's one place in particular that was trying to undercut the Asians, and they should have. They shouldn't. Here's the real problem. The real problem is that a black hair care supply place should not have to undercut the Asians. They shouldn't have to. That's the difference. They shouldn't have to undercut the Asians. They shouldn't have to undercut the Arabs. They shouldn't have to undercut anybody. That black market should be padlocked down. Black market should be locked down, buried and bolted under cement. Should be under concrete. There's no way anybody from outside the black community should be able to touch that market. It should be untouchable. And they're not just touching it. They are molesting it, fondling it, and raping it every single day. And we're just watching. Ho-hum, twiddle our fingers. We're just watching. That's what we do. And then you wonder why you don't have anything to pass down to your children. Because you thought this was a game. And it's not. We're going to try Mona back here in a minute, but we're going to first check on caller from the 786. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Black first.
What's your name? Where you call from?
Lonnie, South Florida, Miami.
Brother Lonnie, you were telling us here yesterday about a very good piece of wisdom about black men at their ages. And what's your mind, black man?
Oh, yeah. What was on my mind is that it's been 50 years of people just waiting on the blind side. And for people who don't know what the blind side is, it's a movie that came out several years ago about a football player, Michael Orr, that he was waiting on white, you know, well, he wasn't waiting, but a white family took him and saved him from the hood, and he went on to college and then to the NFL. And it's 50 years of that, people just waiting on white people to come and say, waiting for everybody else to come on and save us. And like the other guy said about his friend who he's okay working as an orderly and coming in with white women and non-black women, is this idea of what they want is a nice paycheck and a non-black woman. And not to deflect from that and go off of men doing it, but black women are doing it too. I mean, you take Kerry Washington. She's been a known activist for over a decade, and she's married at 37. But you don't hear about any of her dates or whoever she's been with for 36 years of her life, and then she marries a black football player. This idea that you can just sit around and hope for that a white savior is going to come in, whether it's a male or a female, and that's, it's wearing us down and not building anything. Then you throw on top of it, like I got into last night, about people not wanting to help the person next to them, not wanting to help the people around them, because if they rise up, then the light shines on them, and it's suffocating us, and it's taking all the air and energy. And that's why you see people walk around with their heads down. And I could walk down the street, and I'm always looking up. And you see people just with their heads down, and they look tired and defeated. And it's sort of, you sort of get this idea that they're defeated because they haven't gotten, that savior hasn't come. You know, the white person on the horse hasn't come and scooped them up and say, I'm going to save you from the rest of these black people. And it's beating us, and it's hard to build anything. And it's the fear of, if you want to do anything with black people, are you going to fail doing it with black people? Because how many of them are actually going to support you and come to your business opposed to going to the Arab or the white guy or something? And then it's easy. So you have that feel of, is it better to get $5 from a white man than to make your own $2? Because it's safer. At least you know that $5 that you get from them, you know that it's going to be there for a while at least. But you don't know if the $2 that you make for yourself is going to be there next month, because you look around at your own people and you say, are they going to come into my store, or are they going to go across the street to the Arab store? Are they going to come into my establishment? Are they going to come to me? Because if they're not, then that means I have to go outside. Now I'm going outside to other people, so why do I have to turn around and really be for my people when that's not who came to me when I was building this? And it's,
you know, that's
gap
amazing.
Between people.
I mean, we were talking yesterday to the young man in Chicago of Whole Foods. And could you imagine Whole Foods building a store in a suburb? In a suburb of Miami, for, let's just say. And Whole Foods wondering, will the people in the suburbs come and buy from them? Could you imagine that?
Oh, no, of these, course not. They'll,
these people are living in the suburbs. They're always talking about how they deserve the best. They deserve the best this and the best that. And yet Whole Foods could build a store with the best produce and the best service and everything. And we're wondering if you're going to show up. This is what Dr. Claude Anderson means by black people always see everything upside down and backwards. The fact that it even has to be a debate for us.
Yeah, it is. It shouldn't be a debate. It should be, somebody else, somebody black opened up a black establishment. I don't need to go to the white establishment anymore. Somebody black opened up a movie theater. I don't need to go to the white movie theater anymore. I need to go to the black movie theater. And I had friends when I was putting everything together in my business ventures before that said, I want to own the business. And then I'll say, I would even tell them, well, you want to open up a gym, but you don't want to open up a gym pretty much in a black neighborhood because they're not going to want to show up. You just won't get any business. Go and open it up in a multicultural neighborhood because you want to thrive. Your idea as a business person is you want to thrive. Your idea of a black person is you want to thrive as a black person around black people. But how can you do that when the black people that you want to thrive around aren't helping you thrive because they don't see any benefit in you thriving because they want to meet their white savior that's going to come in and save them, but they're never going to come. So they're going to keep you in the hole, too. It's sort of that thing where if you throw 100 men into a hole and it's only one ladder and it's only going to work for one person, they're ready to just fight to the death rather than let one person out of the hole and say, go find some rope. And that's what we are. We're ready to fight with each other to the death and keep all of us in the hole rather than to get people out and say, help people out. And we're going to hold the ladder. You get out, you come back with rope. But we've also seen where the person goes off and says, I'm not going back for them. I'm going to go save myself, i.e. Oprah. And that's what we do as a people because we don't have any care about being black. People want to say that they're black when it's, you know, when it's from Martin Luther King Day, I'm black. I want to stay home and barbecue instead of going out and actually doing something. People take, just being black is, okay, what little teeny tiny privileges can I get from being black? And from that point, then, you know, I'm good with it. If I can walk into a bar and I could pick up a white woman, then, you know, I'm good. As long as I could be, if it's only going to be me and another or two other black guys here at work, then, and they're not going to fire us, then, you know, I'm good. I'm okay. I got a good check coming in. As long as I could pick up anything that I can, a little tiny benefit that I can, then I'm okay with it. I don't need better. You look through your news feed and you see people say, I'm blessed. And I look and I say, how can you be blessed when I have more than you do? And you're talking about you're blessed. And I'm like, I need to get more. And you're saying that you're blessed. How can you can't be blessed. And that's our idea of we're just going to be blessed with anything. We're just going to be happy with anything. We're just going to be, you know, our women are just going to be happy with, hey, I'm in a relationship with a guy. I don't need to be married. Our men are just like, oh, well, we don't need to care about getting the best of our women for ourselves. We just need to get a woman. That's good enough. And I've had arguments with guys where I said, well, okay, I got the car, I got the job, I live on my own. What do you have? And then they'll come back, well, I don't have any of that, but at least I got a woman. And it's like, well, at least you got a woman where you don't really, then you don't have anything because she can find a man anywhere. Like, you don't have anything. Like, having a woman isn't your accomplishment in life. Having something that you could hold and something that you could pass down is an accomplishment. Having a kid isn't an accomplishment. So we're in the hole thinking that the best that we can do, whatever we do in that hole is a grand accomplishment, while everybody else passing by the hole is saying, you guys haven't done anything. You know, you're in a hole. How can you be happy and applauding in a hole? How can you feel blessed in a hole with people who don't care? And they'll really see you in a hole there. So we're all just stuck in this hole trying to keep anybody from climbing out. And we're ending up holding the person who's going to help us get out of that hole in the hole. Because some people are going to be able to get out and then actually come back and help. But they don't want that. They just want to get out of the hole for themselves. They want their white savior to come in and get them out of the hole. And then as they walk away, they're looking back at everybody. Well, I'm better than you now because I've been accepted by white people because they chose me. And that's what we have today. We still have that slave mentality where you have a row of slaves, and then some white person come and say, yeah, I want that one, I want that one, I want that one, and then they feel better about themselves. So if a white person comes up and says, oh, yeah, hey, black man, I want to take you home and have sex with you, he feels better about himself to actually go out and be pursued or pursue a black woman. So you feel better about yourself just by being pointed out to a white person. If a white person tells you that you're handsome or you're pretty or you're beautiful, you feel so much better about it than a black person would because they're the epitome. They draw the line instead of saying, you know what, we're going to draw the line for ourselves and we're going to help ourselves out because it puts you back around all of your people where you, Jace, being black is not all the all-supremacist best thing that you can be. Them just being black, him just being a black man is good enough for some white woman who wants to hop on top of a black person. So that's okay for him. So he accepts it. I have a nice paycheck, and I have somebody who just she's gonna look at me special because I'm black. That's all I have to bring to the table is I'm black. So that's good enough. Whereas with a black woman, he's not going to be able to dream that. He has to do more. He has to be more. But first we have to tell ourselves that we can be more, and we have to expect more from ourselves. Because as long as we're sitting around waiting on a white savior to come in, we're not going to be better for ourselves. We're just going to be worse for ourselves. And it's going to ruin, and it's already ruined our society, and it's the worst thing to be laughed at. We shouldn't be okay with being laughed at. I remember Dave Chappelle being told that people aren't laughing with you, people are laughing at you. And then he stopped doing comedy because you don't want to feel laughed at. And once we realize that the rest of the world isn't laughing with us, they're laughing at us, then we'll start to actually do something with each other because we're the only ones that's not laughing at each other. The rest of the world, we think that we're laughing with each other and the rest of the world is laughing with us. And they're just laughing at us. And then they're willing to come in and still do the pick the best ones out of the bunch. As long as they can pick a Barack Obama or Oprah Winfrey and they can get away with it, then we're okay with that because we'll have – it's the lottery system. Maybe tomorrow
we're looking for. We're looking for somebody to come and christen somebody. Dump with power as a group. We identify with power as individuals. Or should I say, we identify with being taken in. We don't actually understand or accept what power is. We just want to be taken in. Every time you call in, brother, you just say so many prescient things. We really need to get you your own broadcast. We don't hate here. We really need to have your own broadcast, to be totally honest with you, because your kind of insight into this kind of thing really deserves and needs much more time than I can give you. I mean, you really need like a good hour to go through everything. So you really ought to consider that if you haven't. You really need to. I want to ask you about something. How many black leaders do you have in your area?
Excuse me, what was that?
How many black theaters do you have in your area?
I would have to say zero.
None at all, not even a little honky-tonk one.
No, I think the closest black theater is about maybe 17 miles away from where I am now. And it's an African, they do mostly African films.
Well, I mean 17 miles, So I'm not sure how long it takes to get 17 miles in Miami. 17 miles in Shreveport is not very hard, but then again, Shreveport is not Miami. So I'm
It wouldn't take long. Maybe 25 minutes.
Yeah, and my kind of thing right there is, how much networking have they done with you all?
None. They don't do any. I stumbled across it. Like I told you last night, I looked for things. So I found that by looking for it years ago. But they don't – and they were in operation since, I think, the early 90s. And they're still up now, but they don't do a whole lot of networking and advertisement. Even the businesses in the black community don't do advertisement. You never see advertisement from them. All you see is advertisement from everybody else. And you see people passing out flyers from everybody else, and it's hard to find somebody that does actual advertisement of any black-owned business. It's just they don't see where that is reason to put a dollar on the table, for the same reason that black people don't see the reason to put a dollar on the table to buy information. Because if you take how much information is worth, banks spend more money protecting that information than they do their vault. And that just shows you just how much they care about their information more than the actual cash in the vault. We don't do that. We don't see how much, you know, $1,000 advertisement, we don't see how much that brings you in. It's just, I just spent $1,000. And we don't see that.
We look at everything as an expense. Black people do not understand the definition, the meaning, or the concept of investment. We just see everything as an expense. I paid for these Jordans. I paid for this BMW, or I'm making my payments on it. I paid the rent. I paid for that advertising. We don't see anything as an investment. Investment is a foreign concept to us. And that absolutely, positively has to change. And it's got to change now. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Okay, let my black first then. I hope that we realize one day that we're being laughed at, and that snaps us out of this, because it's been 50 years of it. Could you put me back in the on hold so I can listen?
Okay. I just want to make sure, are you friends with me on Facebook or following me on Twitter?
Oh, yeah, I always follow you. I even comment on some of your posts.
Okay, I want you to send me a message on Facebook then so I'll know who you are. So I'll know exactly who you are. Probably in my list in there somewhere, just so I can know exactly who you are. Because, like I say, individuals who are serious and knowledgeable about this stuff, I want to make sure that I keep individuals like you close so that we know exactly where you are. And maybe, I don't know, maybe you and me will ride over there to that African theater and let them know, hey, y'all got to, it's the 21st century. You got to kick your gear, man.
Yeah, they got to put on some commercials or something, on the airwaves or something.
Well, at least communicate to your people. Even if you ever put up one commercial, more than five people need to know you're there. More than five people need to be aware.
I know a guy, a black guy, who makes flyers and cards, and he'll make 100 cards for $10. He'll make 100 flyers for $15. And it's just that simple, as getting flyers and cards and passing them around.
Or having a Facebook page and actually inviting some movies there that people want to see and let them know, hey, this is the place we can see it in our area. And as long as we're not in the middle of the hood or whatever, just say, hey, this is a place where you can come and see this kind of thing, man. Just get that going. There's no reason that people like 500 years later or Tariq should be having the whole people at gunpoint to get their stuff shown. There's no reason for that. No reason for that.
Yeah, as soon as somebody like Tariq comes out and you come out with your documentaries, people should be able to, you just should be able to go out there and, hey, you, Jason Black has a documentary coming out. It's going to be out next week. Really? And it's a spread and it's packed movie theaters. We should be making $100 million every time one of our movies and documentaries come out. Instead, people are looking and saying, well, I've never heard of that guy, let alone that film.
And that's the kind of thing that we need to break. Definitely send me a message, bro. I definitely want to keep in touch with you.
Okay.
And Black First, as always, we'll go ahead and mark him as listening here. I'm going to see if I can try to get Mona back on the line here and see if her phone's doing any better. Momo, how's it sounding over there?
Can you hear me now?
Good.
I have to agree with your last caller. Either black people are deemed uppity when they get a business, or they think they're uppity when they get a business. They don't go out and promote. They don't go out and say, hey, my name is Mona Lachey and I have a beauty salon. You know, you might have a stylist already, but say she goes on vacation, you know, give me a try. We're just so puffed up, oh, I own a business, and we think people owe us something, and we have to come. They have to come to us because we own a business, and they don't. We have to go out there and market, and we have to market 10 times more than a white person or a Hispanic person because we do not have any unity. We got to go out there and pass out flyers and talk to the community and let them know who we are, what we're doing, and humble ourselves and ask them to come and patronize our businesses. And then when they do patronize our businesses, we need to provide the best service that we can. And we also need to be open to when people say, I don't like your service, and this is why I don't, and try to improve on that. And we don't do that. And it is said that you're not a success in business until you've hit that five-year margin. We don't even last 5 years because to be self-employed, you don't know how much you're going to make on a week-to-week basis like your person that has a steady job. So you have to discipline yourself, and you have to sacrifice, and you can't be lazy. You have to be willing to work. You have to be able to do 16, 18 hours. You have to be able to sit in that shop, restaurant, whatever business it is, if nobody comes in. I know I used to sit in my salon, and I'd sit in the dark to save electricity, but if I saw a car pull up, I'd turn those lights back on. And they used to tell me that I was the hardest working woman in Riverside. When they went to work, they saw that little head. When they came home from work, they saw that little head. When they went to the club, they saw that little head. When they came back from the club, they saw that little head. And I was the owner. And no one knew I was the owner until about 4 years later. It wasn't in me to puff up and say, I'm the owner. I was providing a service for my community and being self-sufficient for myself and showing my son that he can be an owner of a business.
You know, that reminds me of somebody else. There's a guy. And every single person who ever talks about him all say the same thing. It's been 40 years, and he is still the most engaged, the most knowledgeable, and the hardest working person, not just in his business, but in the whole industry that he works in. His name is Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Vince McMahon of the WWE, and everybody says the exact same thing about him. He's going on 70 years old now. I remember him when he was a young man of 34 back in the 80s, and he was the hardest working person then. He was the first one in the offices in Stamford, Connecticut, and the last one to leave then. Hulk Hogan said it, that you could call Vince McMahon at 2 in the afternoon or 2 in the morning to talk wrestling with him, and his enthusiasm about it was the same, even 50 years later, even 40 years later, that he is the hardest working person in his business. And does that explain to you why even a mega titan like Time Warner and Turner Cable went to war against Vince McMahon? And when it was all over, even though Vince was in bad trouble for a while, just worked even harder. He got even more creative. And when it was over, he bankrupted ECW and WCW. And now he is the only thing still standing. We as black people do not have a reputation as being the hardest working people in the room. We can't keep looking at slavery, and who in the hell would want to? But we can't keep looking at justifying ourselves by slavery. We should be sitting up here running rings, doing donut circles around the illegals and around everybody else. We should be just rolling rings around, and yet we're not. Other people see building a business as their way of leaving a legacy. Black people want to build a business because they see that as a way of winning the lottery. Let me build a business and get some other folks here working for me so I can sit down. And that's not the reason that you start a business. That's not the purpose for doing it. Money comes as a result of doing what you do better than anybody else. But if you don't ever get a grasp of that do it better than anybody else concept, you can forget about making tons of money at it. It's not going to happen. That's not the way it works. We keep trying to do everything upside down and backwards, and that doesn't occur. That doesn't occur, and we're still talking about it. How many other black-owned hair salons do you have where you are?
There's several. There's a lot of black-owned. Matter of fact, my salon that I'm currently working at, I owned the salon for 8 years, and in 2005 I sold it to my barber. He has now had it for 9 years, and I am now working for him. And he is right now under construction. The name of the salon is Much Love. He's getting ready to open up More Love up the street. So this particular salon has been in existence for 15 years, well, 17 years. But about 5 miles from around each other, there's different black salons there. And here's the thing that I want to say about salons and restaurants. White people don't feel intimidated to come patronize salons and restaurants. It's your realtors or your finance advisors. They're not going to fool with us when it has to do with large sums of money because they think that African-American people are going to scam them. So they don't have a problem coming into a beauty shop or a barbershop and getting their hair done or eating our food. They don't. It's anything that has to deal with a large amount of money. And I just want to say one thing, Jason, because I am so proud of you that you are young as you are and you're trying to rally these young people. Had I known what I knew then, now what I know, didn't know then, I would be further on in my life. You have to start off young. We as African-American people do not have the luxury to wait on time. We don't have the luxury to sit and think, oh, I'll do it next year. We don't. And you have to be able to, in order for you to be able to be successful in this white system, you have to have good credit. And the reason why African-American businesses shut down, because we spend our last dime just opening up the shop or opening up the restaurant. We don't have a nest egg. We don't have any money in reserve just in case something breaks down. We don't. We lose our last or we quit our job instead of hanging in there a few years to see if it's really going to work. So we need good credit scores, and you need to do this young. So when you get to my age at 53, you are set for retirement. Had me and my son's father been on the same page at the same time, we today at 53 and 52 would have a beauty salon, a construction company, and a trucking company. Our house would have been 3 years short of being paid off, and we would have been set. And we would have had a legacy for my and his son and his three other children. But we weren't on the same page. I got it at 24. He didn't get it till 40. So now it's a struggle. And as you're self-employed, you don't have medical, dental, 401k plan and all that stuff. So you have to do this young and sacrifice because there's always going to be a party. There's always going to be a turn-up. There's always going to be that purse or those shoes or those jeans. You have to start young. You're not missing anything by going to work. You're empowering yourself. You're putting yourself in a position where you don't have to save for a vacation for 2 years before you go because you have that discipline and you have sacrifice.
As black people, and this is a sad commentary, but what you just said, as black men as a group, we don't look at black women and see them as anything as a resource for sex. Working with them from an objective standpoint and saying, let's have something, is like, if we can't go to bed with you, we don't have a use for you. We don't care what your ideas are, whatever. If I can't take you to bed, I don't have a use for you.
Exactly.
A lot of fellas out there right now having a bunch of trouble because of that. When I did that story that I did of Suja Juice, this white male met this white female. Don't know if those two have slept together yet. Don't know if they ever did or ever will. I do know that they're both millionaires now. I do know that. So they can sleep with each other or the rest of Southern California if they want to. Only now they can do it from a position of leisure. Black people want to sit up here and take the crumbs of life and be struggling and scrapping and scraping till the day we die. And that mindset, that mentality, that it's all right, it's acceptable, and it's proved to sit up here and scrap and scrape and claw and be in desperation and poverty until the day we die. That's got to go. That has got to go. You can't survive as a people when nobody has any type of long-term planning whatsoever. What's the plan? Well, the plan is to get a car. For what? So I can go to work and get some money. For what? So I can take Mona to bed. Okay, and what's we going after that? I'm going to repeat. Mona to bed. Back to work. Mona in bed. Back to work. Dude, that's not a plan. That's a character defect. And nobody should have to explain that to us, but I'll be damned if we don't. I will be damned if as grown black people we don't have to have that explained to us, that what are you building? What are you leaving? What is your plan? What is your goal? Why are we having to do this over and over again? As a people, we have to keep doing the same thing. And then we wonder why it is that the neighborhoods that we are in stay perpetually bad and get worse. Is because you never consolidated any type of power, wealth, or influence. Because when it was your turn to build, the only thing you could really figure out how to do was to get Mona in bed. She said, we need to be making something substantial for ourselves. And you said, what the hell for? I already got you in bed, didn't I? I have arrived. I have reached my goal. I got you in bed. What you talking about building something bigger? And then we wonder why it is that ghetto gaggers nothing but black women. You could not have a white version of ghetto gaggers. Not because black men couldn't film it, but because black men are completely and totally uninterested in paying the money and investment it would take to make that happen. White men believe in putting their money where their mouths are and putting their investment where their mouth is. He ain't got to say nothing to you. He just kept putting $100 bills on the table until she was screaming yes. He understands that with black men as a group, it is entirely too difficult to get us to focus on empowerment. Too damn difficult. Because that's where everything else comes from. You can get all the women and all the money you want to. Once you got the money and the power, you can get all the women you want to. That's a given. And black men just continue to sit up here and lower our standards for ourselves, but then want respect. I'm the first black person, black male, who ever told any of you all that stop calling black men gold diggers. I don't want to hear anything else about a black woman being a gold digger. Because I would be damned if I'll have my daughter snuggling up to some dude who doesn't have anything at all. You've lived your whole life and we can't see where you've produced anything. She can be broke on her own. She doesn't need to be with you so you can both be two broke people. And I definitely don't want her with somebody who doesn't even have a plan in place for how he's going to deal with any of these things. But he wants to jump in the bed with my child? I don't think so. Plenty of heifers over there at the housing projects. Let him go grab one of them. Not mine. Well, Mona, if you want to stay on the line here, you're definitely welcome to do so. If you want to drop off, you can. I'm going to see if I can grab a few more calls here in the meantime, though, and I thank you for giving us a call.
Nathan, caller, can I just say one thing? I'm sorry.
Yeah, you can say a few things.
I just want to say one thing about the Hispanic community that we're not recognizing. When I was growing up, we used to laugh at Hispanics. They would jump out of a Volkswagen, 10 of them. They would live in a house, 20 of them. And now you fast forward to 2014, and those same Hispanics that were selling oranges on the corner, that are out there right now selling hot-ass cherries and dead flowers on the corner, they are driving Escalades in California. They are pushing Benzes in California. They have homes in California. I live in San Bernardino. San Bernardino has been bankrupt for several years. Across the street is Cardenas. It's a Mexican supermarket. I can look to my right, and it used to be a Burger King. They shut down. That is now Mamacitas. I can drive about 5 minutes down the way, and it used to be a KFC. It's now Jorge's Burgers. And they are just up here, and they are just cleaning up, and they are just taking over. So we're – and they're laughing at us. And now when they come in the salon to get their hair done, they're business owners, and they are laughing at us. And we seem not to be able to get it. And they understand that bringing in $1 is better than bringing in anything. And we have to adapt that kind of concept.
You know,
we do.
When I was out west last year while filming and everything, I saw the exact same thing that you're talking about. In Arizona, in Colorado especially, and in California. But in Colorado especially.
Yes.
I would see all these Mexican females, all these Latinas, and I'm talking about, you know, like 5 foot, 5 foot two, driving
yes.
the biggest damn SUVs. I mean, they would be driving, when you say about driving Escalades, they would be driving the biggest damn luxury SUV you could think of. They had their Escalades and their Navigators and their Range Rovers, just the biggest things.
Yes.
And I'm sitting there watching that because they don't have that here. They haven't been doing that here just yet. I wonder what it'll look like when they do. But I'm sitting there, the Negroes with their used cars and the Latinas running around with these the small, they were little ladies too. I mean, I wasn't no 6 foot tall ones out there, just all little, but they were all pushing the biggest damn SUV they could find. And what does that tell you? That tells you that she didn't get up this morning with sex on her mind. They are here to build an economy. They're here to build an economy. Negroes not trying to build their bank account up, and these folk are here building an economy. And then you wonder why they own everything you've got. Hell no, as a black female, you are mentally deranged if you have respect for a black male who hasn't built anything. Damn that. Damn how good in bed he is. Mona will tell you, that don't mean nothing. You can't build your life with his sex appeal. Because when the electric bill shows up, the last thing you want is somebody talking about sex. Getting sex never kept anybody up at night. Not worried it didn't. Not getting sex never made anybody pace the floor at 2 a.m. worried with their hands trembling. Not getting sex never made anybody worry about the sun coming up the next day. Because it's the 4th of the month and you didn't pay the rent by the 3rd of the month grace period. Not getting sex never made you feel that way. And that's why we have to escape that mindset. Caller from the 301, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Yes, I have a comment. I want to piggyback on what you and Mona was talking about. A
well,
lot
first
of those.
Of all, let me find out here. First of all, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Tina.
Hello,
from
Tina.
Maryland.
Where are you calling? From? Tina from Maryland. Maryland. I know you. And what's on your mind?
Okay, so I'm kind of gonna piggyback on what you and Mona was talking about. A lot of those Hispanics are the reason why they look like that they're prospering is because a lot of them have bought drugs in. And they're selling drugs to drive these Escalades and these big cars so quickly over here. So you have to remember that you know, a lot of them are.
Okay, but
you
that's
know,
not the majority. But that's not the majority. Come on, let's not do that.
No,
let's
no,
not
I didn't say majority.
That.
I said a
it's
lot
not,
of
okay,
them.
Okay, that's okay. That's not even a lot. There's a few, but here's the real problem. The real problem is even if we want to buy into that. Because we as black people spend so much time trying to act as if somebody's got an unfair advantage. Oh, they're getting government subsidies. Oh, they're getting refugee assistance. Oh, they're getting welfare. Oh, they're dealing drugs. You know what? Here's the problem. The problem is we've done all those things. And what do we have to show for doing all that stuff?
Well, can I say this? Okay. I think a lot of us have to remember, okay, you said don't go back to slavery, but it was just 50 years ago, I think, that we could, you know, vote. So a lot of our mindsets are still kind of like struggling out of that, you know, that era. I'm not saying, I'm talking about, you know, how people are, black people are thinking now. You know, a lot of blacks just came out of that era of being able to vote. Okay, and to sit in the front of the bus and stuff. So we have a, you know, our mindsets are kind of bad, you know, from that type of torture over hundreds of years of being, you know, told that we're black, we're ugly, we're, you know, all kinds of things that our mindsets have been.
Okay, there's a couple of problems, okay? First of all, we didn't get the right to vote with the Voting Rights Act. We didn't just get that. The Voting Rights Act helped to make sure that it cut down discrimination in certain places. Black folk have been voting for over a century and a half. Black folk voted for Lincoln. So, I mean, it's and here's the real problem. The real problem is when you take a look at things like the Black Wall Street and the Cotton Club and things like that, those all happened under what? Jim Crow and segregation. So what are we telling you here? Black people's biggest period of economic progress and prosperity happened under all those conditions you named.
But
we started going downhill.
Black Wall
okay.
Street.
Who destroyed Black Wall Street?
White folks did.
Okay, which one?
What do you mean, which one?
Okay, that's exactly what I mean right there.
The racist ones that went in and burnt down Black Wall Street
I didn't mean
and
that.
Stuff like that.
I didn't mean which white folk. I mean which Black Wall Street.
Well, I thought it was only one.
Okay.
You can educate
that,
me on more.
This is what I mean. This is exactly the problem that we have. We as black people have perfected the art of excuses. Black women have perfected the art of excuses for their weight, excuses for their attitudes, excuses for everything. I'm thick. No, you're just fat. Waddling, jiggling, unhealthy, obese, and fat. Tons of excuses. I'm big boned. I got thyroid issues. My God, every black woman cannot have thyroid issues. There is a health issue all right that's going on. She just don't care about it. Black males have excuses for everything under the sun of why they're not able to do what the Mexicans and the illegals are doing. Everything, but while they got brand new sneakers, but they're downloading Hidden Colors bootleg online.
That's
wearing funny. Brand new Jordans. But talking about can they get the hookup for Hidden Colors. Now, with Black Wall Street, I'm not going to go into exactly how many there are. I'm going to make that your homework assignment. What I am going to say is that everybody knows about Tulsa, which is the one that you're referring to. Everybody knows about the bombing of Tulsa, but do you know about the burning of Wilmington? Oh,
no.
Got to look into that. Do you know about Rosewood?
Oh,
they made
yeah,
a movie
I know
about
Rosewood.
It. Okay, but they yes. made a movie about it so far. Do you know about Philadelphia?
Yes.
Philadelphia? There's one in Philadelphia. Yes. Like I said, so far, you said I thought there was
well,
one.
Well, you know,
so,
when I said Black Wall Street, I only knew one to be named Black Wall Street.
Okay, but they all were.
So,
okay, ma'am. Excuse me. No, ma'am. Are you trying to say that the
I'm just
other
saying
ones,
me, I, personally. I'm just saying me, personally. I only knew one to be named Black Wall Street. Like you just
okay.
said that there were many more. So, you
yes,
know,
ma'am.
I was just talking about the one that, you know, black people really had it going on at that particular time. You know, so.
Yeah,
and,
Greenwood, Archer, and Pine is just the one, is just the first one. And the reason for that is because that was the only one that Tom Joyner named. You all are talking about the Black Wall Street today because Tom Joyner talked about it during his Black History Month back in the 90s. That's the reason that you all know about it today. But Greenwood, Archer, and Pine was not only one. It was one among several. So the question is not what happened to Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. The question is, why didn't you rebuild Greenwood, Archer, and Pine? Why didn't you establish elsewhere? Because if the same thing had happened in Chinatown, would we be sitting here talking about it like it was some long-lost hidden city of El Dorado legend? No, it wouldn't. What happened to Greenwood, Archer, and Pine is that black people came up with excuse after excuse after excuse after excuse for why we shouldn't rebuild. As opposed to saying, you know what? The only thing that Greenwood, Archer, and Pine and Wilmington and Rosewood were missing were guns and plenty of them. That's the only thing that we were missing. And you notice that conversation never comes up. Never hear anybody saying, oh, by the way, the Mexicans with their drugs and their escalades, they brought their guns, too. Out the Hawaiian Gardens, nobody wants to mention, oh, by the way, they got their guns, too. And Jordan Downs, nobody wants to say, and Nick Gardens, nobody wants to say they got their guns, too. Harbor Gateway, nobody ever wants to talk about, yeah, they're illegals and they're Mexicans and they're escalades and they brought their guns. Nobody ever wants to talk about that. Building a community is one part of it, but you're supposed to also invest in the ability to hold your community. And holding it includes protecting your family and your body and not allowing excuses for why you couldn't. And if that means that this is no go zone for anybody who's outside of the community, so be it. Because you go up into Chinatown talking about tearing some stuff up and pulling a Wilmington Chinatown. You go out there and try it and see how far you get. I don't care how many rednecks you bring. There's a reason that they didn't march into Chinatown like that. You know why? Because you would have just come up missing. And nobody ever would have found you. And nobody would have ever said a word about it. You just would have come up missing. There would have been a few gunshots. Might have been a fire. By the time the police and the fire department were allowed in, the bodies are all gone and they just never heard from you again.
Okay, well, the reason why I initially called is, have you ever heard about the sodium fluoride in the water and what it does to people?
Yes, that's why I don't drink unfiltered water.
Right. There's a list of things. One is that it kills rodents, causes cancer, lowers your IQ, causes empathy. It was used by the Nazis for the Jewish people, and that's why they said the Jewish people were so docile and went to their death without a fight. And it's used in the water and toothpaste, and they're telling people to stop, using fluoride toothpaste and drinking this water because that's what's causing a lot of people to be kind of docile and don't want to fight back and don't have that aggression get up and do things and stuff.
Or excuses. I use fluoride toothpaste every single day. And
well,
I'm just telling you what they're saying.
Okay.
I understand that. So. That's what I'm saying. I understand that we've all been hearing this for 20 years. Ma'am, I use fluoride toothpaste every single day. I think you would say, I would argue that I'm one of the least docile people you will ever meet in your life.
And you drink the water. You drink the tap water, right?
No, I don't drink it unfiltered, no. But here's the thing. Mexicans you're referring to, that is not that problem. And got plenty of white folk drinking the same water, unfiltered, using the same toothpaste more times a day than I do. I use it twice, but got plenty of white folk who use it more than that. And yet, for some reason, it's not having the same effect on them. Why is that? How did they build up this immunity to this fluoride and these metals, the fluoride and the aluminum? We can go down the list. How did they build up that immunity and we didn't? And by the way, why is it that black people were already doing, we didn't become docile since they started fluoridating the water. That was a 20th century advent. What about the previous four centuries before that? The slave trade had been going on for 300 years before they started. The African slave trade had been going on for over 300 years before they started fluoridating the water. So can you explain to me what was happening? Excuse me, sister. Can you just explain to me then what was causing our docility from roughly 1690 until 1899 then? What was causing that?
I can't tell you. You can't tell us either. Okay, so I can't tell you.
Yes, I can. Excuse me. Now, that I take offense at what you just did. I can't tell you. You just sat
you
here said and
said,
you
said from 16
can't tell me
something. Okay, so tell us what happened from the time we came over here. What happened?
Okay, well, we don't need conspiracy theories.
No, I'm willing to listen because, I'm a student. You know,
okay,
we all can learn something every day.
If you're willing to listen, then it's time to listen. Now, fluoridated water and aluminum are...
No, let's go back to what you said that you were going to tell me.
Gina, I'm going to do this one more time. I will not do it a third. You said you want to learn... and you want to listen, I expect you now to exercise that capacity to listen. You were asked a question, and you flatly answered, I know. It is time for you to listen to someone who does. The next time that my voice is going and your voice interrupts, you'll just have to listen in silence. The reason that black people were exhibiting all of these behaviors long before conspiracy theories about fluoridated water and aluminum and every other cowardly, lily-livered excuse that we have accepted from Alex Jones and his ilk. Black people accepted the programming. We sat still and accepted it, and that's the brutal, evil truth. And after a couple of generations, they didn't even have to put shackles on us anymore. We simply sat still and accepted our life as servants and a life of servitude. We accepted it, which is what mental and social engineering does to you. Don't have to fluoridate the water. Make them, the guy, Lon sat here and explained it for almost 20 minutes, that we have made ourselves comfortable in the hole we've been living in. Well, and that thing you said earlier about the Jews in Germany, please, thing with them. They became comfortable, and they had a bunch of other Jewish people who were sitting there telling them, don't worry about it. It was in the movie Schindler's List. Hell, they dramatized it. There were a bunch of Jewish people who said, don't worry about the trains showing up. The brown shirts, don't worry, they won't show up here. There was a great special that the History Channel did, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. You need to go watch it sometime. No fluoridated water. Plenty of Jewish people telling their other fellow Jews in Germany, don't worry, it's okay. Chancellor Hitler has assured us that these are all just some rogue elements of the Nazi Party. Just like the Treaty of Versailles, just like Chamberlain, peace in our time. Chancellor Hitler has assured us if we let him gobble up Poland, there won't be any more problems. And they sat until they were all in the ovens. And we as black people desire at this point to have other people tell us what to do and direct our lives. This is why there are so many obvious frauds and shysters and charlatans out there who've been debunked all over the place and black folks still slavishly devoting and following them. Don't need a religion for that. Don't need a Jesus for that. Don't need a statue for that. We desire to be gobbled up by the machine. We desire...
Black people don't wake up. When the collapse of the dollar, we all done. Bye.
Like I say, there are some people who deal with reality, and there are other people who have had a break from reality. Now, we can sit here and deal with conspiracy theories all we want to. black people have been docile because it was easier to be docile and to go along to get along. And what they did was they told us that you've got two choices. You can fight us and die, or we will carve you out a little niche over here in the corner. That's the safe area. And as long as you stay in that niche, you will not be at odds with us. Because if you are at odds with us, we will fight you and kill you. And we grew comfortable with that little niche. We made it into our home. We accept. We determined to live in it. And that was what happened to us. Every slave is complicit at some level. Every slave is complicit in his own servitude. Luna, have you been brushing your teeth?
Yes, sir.
Okay, because I'm just asking because I want to find out if anybody out there after hearing her, how many of the, is why so many of y'all got bad breath? Man. That might be it right there, Mona. Maybe so many of them have bad breath out there because they're trying to keep away from the mind-controlling fluoride. Maybe that's what it is.
No, we really have to go back to what you just said. We weren't taught to go out here and get a business. We were taught to conform, to make as less noise as possible, to walk around here with our head down, to feel like second-class citizens, to treat ourselves like second-class citizens. It all comes down to fear. We are afraid. We are afraid to go out here and open a business. I'm always talking to young men. I told them they can take my truck, go to San Bernardino Community College. They offer a janitorial course. I think it's about 6 weeks. Find out how to use those machines. Go use my truck. Go get you a mop. Go get you a broom. Go get you some cleaning solution. Go to Walmart. Get you one of those one-piece jumpsuits. Get you some name tags. And go around to these commercial buildings and ask and you clean their places. And do it for free. And when you do that, do the best you can, and then you take a picture of it. And you start your portfolio. And you outbid anybody else in the area that is cleaning these buildings. And they refuse to do it. I have a young man that cuts hair outside his grandmother's house. Go to cosmetology school. You have a large family. You take pictures. Become a photographer. It's all kind of things that you can do. Anything that African-American people are doing, we should be selling. Black men wear white tees all day long. Go down there and get your business license. Go down to there where they sell those wholesale T-shirts. Find out how much they sell them in the swap meets. I don't know if you guys have swap meets out there. And sell them for a dollar less. Make you a fire, and now you sell white tees. And then you can graduate to black tees. And then you guys wear do-rags. You should be selling all of that. And as far as Kazuri is concerned, they sold that press and cone plant because I asked the distributor, and he said the family did not want the responsibility. So, Jason, you're absolutely correct. When we think about Allensworth, when we think about Rosewood, when we think about Philadelphia, when we think about Wilmington, after they were destroyed, those people, fear set in again. Because you cannot have an entrepreneurial spirit and then go back to working a 9-to-5. It does not work. I tried it before. And here at 53, I know I cannot retire doing hair, and I'm trying to find a way to keep myself self-employed and still make the same amount of money that I can. Because I've been doing this for 20-something years, and I qualify for nothing. I have no job experience in nothing else that will give me the amount of money that I am accustomed to having. So I have to have a master plan again, and I've never been married. But when you try to make money with men, they don't get it. They don't. They're scared to step out there on their own. And African-American women want strong men. They want firm men. And I'm going to tell you this. We don't know what is a black man or what is a black woman. We can describe what they do, but we don't know the essence of that. A black man is supposed to be feared and respected. He is supposed to stand firm. He is supposed to be a role model. He is supposed to go out here and blaze a trail, carve a niche in this world. He is. People are supposed to come up to him and asking him how you do this. And we don't have that. We have the turn up, the sex you out, the twerking, the gossiping, the lying, the cheating. We're excellent at that. No one is going to respect us if they don't see us respecting ourselves. No one. When I'm in the shop and I'm talking about black empowerment and some white people walk in, everybody gets quiet. How does everybody get quiet in a black business because a white person walks in? And I kept on talking one day, Jason, and they agreed with me. She's absolutely correct. We do not respect you because you don't respect yourself. And it's a shame. And we have to wake up. And you're absolutely correct. We keep on making excuses. Oh, slavery. Oh, such and such. Oh, we got a prep. When is the prep over? Go out there, try to make something happen, and if you fail, do it again. Because when I opened my salon, my boyfriend was $100 a week. They came from $135 a week. When I went up to $135 a week 3 years later, everybody was in agreement except for my best friend. And she asked me this question, what happens if everybody quits? And I told her straight out, if they quit, then so be it. But I was not going to be 50 or 60 years old and look back on my life and say, ooh, I should have opened up a business. So I was willing to say, if I open today and close tomorrow, I accomplished something. I stepped outside of my fear. I stepped outside of my box, and I tried this. Father didn't want me to open up a business. He straight out told me that I better work for a white person. But the day those doors opened, my father walked in that salon like he owned it. And even to the point when I needed to close the shop, because after my eighth year, it went from $1,100 to $1,700. I had a son graduating high school, still not married, still didn't have a man to have my back. And I knew that I could not make that payment and my personal bills. So I had to think logically, and I had to take the emotions out of it, and I had to sell it. But I am proud to say that I did own a business. And I know the mechanics of owning a business. And I worked hard to keep that business open. And I'm known in this community for having a business and for being a hardworking woman. But I cannot find a man that wants to be on the same page as me. And you can find one and you can ask him what you want to do, babe. And he'll be like, I want to do this. And you'll say, hey, I got you. I'll help you. And it'll be real strong, the momentum. And then 2 weeks later, they're off to doing what they really want to do, which is nothing. And we're supposed to be the weaker sex. And we're out here doing things by any means necessary. And we want to wrap our arms around a man that's respected in the community. When they see me and you together, they be like, that's a power couple. They got it going on. This is what they do. These Hispanics out here, that I'm not caring. We wear all our wealth on ourselves. You can see a Hispanic little girl, her dress is down to the ground. 2 years later, that dress is to her knee. 2 years more, she's up to a miniskirt. They are not concentrating on that. And they can fight each other today and love each other tomorrow. If we're mad at somebody today in the African-American community, I don't care if it's our mother. We hate them for the rest of our lives. We cannot live together. We cannot save together. We cannot do anything progressive together. We hate ourselves, and everybody else hates us too. And we want instant gratification. I'm sorry.
I can't argue with anything I just heard. I can't argue with anybody, anything I just heard. Now, to the troll in the chat room, Mona is my good buddy. That's who she is. And you are the guy that Rick is tossing out. So now everybody knows who everybody is. That was rather easy, wasn't it? your callers here. The lines are, of course, slammed and jammed. Caller from the 412, I hope you've been brushing your teeth. You're on Live with the Black Channel.
Hello.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello, Jason. My name is Larry from Pittsburgh. Actually, I was just listening. I hit one twice. It said I was in the caller queue. Then when I hit it again, it said I'm off the caller's queue. So just to let you know.
So it's for the wonderful folks over there at Blog Talk. I'll put you back on there. Like I say, Mona, I've pretty much given up at this point of fixing that little problem. I'm just giving up. I don't even know what to do now. I don't even know what to do. Like I say, they've been promising me forever. This is like dealing with your baby daddy. They just keep promising stuff and just never deliver anything. I'm going to come see the kids this weekend. And then you just stop telling the kids he's coming because he never shows up, you know. It's a mess. Caller from the 614, you're on Live with the Black Channel. Caller from 614-702, you're on Live with the Black Channel. Caller from 614 has been abducted, apparently. For everybody who's on the line, I don't know, because Twan Mack, he said that he was able to, he didn't have any problem with getting out of the caller queue. So I don't know. Maybe we're going to have him give classes or something. What is he doing that everybody else isn't? Maybe he's got the special one. Caller from the 731, you're on Live with the Black Channel.
Jason.
What's your name? Where you calling from?
This is Twan Mack from Tennessee.
Wow. We were just talking about you. We were going
to
let you start tutoring.
Yeah, I was to
get out of the call queue because apparently you're the only one who can accomplish it.
Mr. Black, you're not going to believe this, but I wasn't trying to talk to you. I had actually did what I normally do, and it didn't work.
I give up.
I give up.
I'm sorry. You may not, but I am. That's it. I'm done with it. I just everybody
hey,
just
no,
call
just,
in.
No, phone,
and
I'm guess, and close and,
I guess just yeah. is what it is at this point, I guess. I don't know. I've just given up on the idea that people are just going to be able to listen.
I don't understand.
I guess I'll just start.
PC anyway, so it's not a problem. Yeah, well, today I was listening to a phone. And
yeah, well, I don't have a problem with listening either.
Oh,
I'm glad to hear that. I don't have a problem with people listening either. Just tell me that you just want to listen so I don't drop your call. I mean, if you want to listen, just, hey, it didn't take me out the caller queue. Okay, well, tell me that's what happened, and I'll put you back on hold like I did 412. And that's it. But people are not doing that. They're sitting there holding the phone near their eyelashes, and they're sitting there scraping and scratching, and, hello, are you there? Let me just stay quiet. Well, now I'm going to just drop your call altogether. Come on, people. Anyway, what's on your mind, Black man?
Everything, man. I've been listening for the most part tonight. I missed a few parts. It's become painfully obvious that we as a people don't care about ourselves. We don't care about us in the sense of how we can better ourselves and do for ourselves at all. We just don't even believe in it as a tenet, you know. We don't think of it as a goal in life. My goal in life wasn't what it is now. Before I heard it from you, before I heard it from Dr. Umar and Dr. Claude, I was one of these people who was just stumbling through life, going wherever the world took me. Didn't think about empowerment. Didn't think about bettering myself and leaving a legacy for my children. It wasn't until I had children and was in a place where I couldn't provide a legacy for my children that I realized I needed to be providing a legacy for my children. I was looking at my daughter, who's 10, and I was looking at the boys in her class, and I was like, ain't none of these black boys right now are going to be able to be a good husband for her. None of them. Well, I ain't going to say none. Just the vast majority. There was a kid walking around. He had two earrings, hands hanging off his butt. These 10-year-old kids. dreadlocks with blonde in it, talking about sex at 10, graphically. I had no idea about when I was 10. Man, I came from a decent home. Not a great home, but a decent home. And I look at these people and I see them, they glad to do World Star. They glad for drama, Real Housewives, and none of them are. I was talking to people about starting a business. I had a group of my family members around. We have, my dad owns a business. He's been building it for years. He's been trying to get me involved in it. I didn't think about the importance of being involved in it and running it as a youngster. But now, as an older person, I'm like, well, that's actually, this is what he's been teaching me the right way all along. I just wouldn't listen. And then my uncle has a business. It's a farm business. And he's been trying to get other people involved in it. And I was like, this is what we need to be doing right here. They don't want to hear that. And all the power, we don't need no power. We all right. Let's just make a little money to get by. No, we need to make enough money to be with our kids. It's 40 people in my immediate, well, immediate-ish family. And none of them have nothing other than a couple of them who built something. Hello? Am I still
online? Yeah, you're still right here, brother. That's called...
I'm not used to being listened to.
That happens a lot. That happens a lot because black folk are not used to being listened to. And I actually created a place where when black people say something sensible, they can be listened to. We're used to having to shout over people saying stupid stuff. But I tried to cultivate a place where if somebody's saying something intelligent, you know, I let them speak. Now, if somebody sits up here and tells us that... Well, the people who sit up here and tell us that, you know, the reason that we're in the situation we're in today is because we don't understand that, you know, it's the fluoride and the toothpaste and it's that stuff they put in your car upholstery, or it's the radioactive beams coming from the television, you know, once we get into that, then that's going to be a bit, or we need 5 pack mules and a horse to be able to build an economy on the island, you know, stuff like that, I'll jump over. But what you're saying is absolutely right. And you can identify those traits. I don't even have kids, okay? But I know just from watching going to schools with my nieces and my nephews, I can see that. I can sit here and see the difference between them at 8 years old and the other kids in their class.
Yeah.
I can sit there and see that, like with one of my nieces. I'm like, she was talking to some boy, and he's sitting up here looking straight like 50 Cent. I walked over there to her, and I said, if you say another word to him again, I'm going to get you. She sat down, didn't say nothing to him. But my point is, I'm like, I can see right now, this is going to be trouble. And even if he's going through a phase, you talk to him when he gets through with this phase. Because this is a bad thing I'm seeing 8 years old.
And see, people don't think about the seeds they planted in their children until they've harvested the crap that they planted. You know, they don't think about, man, I shouldn't let my kids use any type of language or hear any type of language. They shouldn't be seeing me do these things. I've noticed I'm fat. I'm not going to lie. I'm not being boned. I am fat. And my son, he's 9, and I notice he's putting on pudge. I was like, dang, he's getting a little soft around the middle. He's always been a bigger kid, but now he's putting on some weight. And I'm like, well, what if he's seeing me do? He's seeing me be out of shape. He's seeing me not take care of myself. And those female fitness motivations you put up, those are my motivations. I'm like, dang, I couldn't. If I was single, I couldn't pull a woman like that to save my life. So now I'm eating better. I got him eating better. We exercise together. We walk. We do a little push-ups and pull-ups and sit-ups and jumping jacks and doing little stuff around the house we can do together. And then I'm trying to get into the gym. I hadn't started yet. I need to. I quit making excuses and actually get up and go. But
I mean, you know, it's all about having the kind of life that you want. People who get a bunch of money, there's a reason why they're healthier and thinner and whatnot. It's because these are people who actually have that value system. They want to have a healthy wallet. They want to have a healthy family. They want to have a healthy self. They want to have it all. Don't just want to have a nice car. And for the average black person, particularly black male, you can buy his whole life with a car. If you promise him an expensive car, understand something. How many of these rappers are now slaves to these record companies and got nothing to show for the millions or hundreds of millions of dollars that they gave these record companies, and all they could show you was a car? I mean, remembering, because I'm how old are you, Twan?
28, 7. I'm about to be 28.
Okay, I have to ask that because you'll know it, but other people won't know. Sam 7, he'll know it. Mona, I'm pretty sure she'll know it. But back in the 90s when Ruthless Records, right after Ruthless Records started and whatnot, in 89, there was the DOC. Real name, Tracy Curry. But the DOC, I mean, he was riding high off of No One Could Do It Better. And when he put out his second or third album, which was long after his voice got messed up, he made that song, I want to say the name of the song is From Ruthless to Death Row, something like that. And he says in the song, you know, starting from the beginning, you know, all types of friends, 454-300-BENZ. I mean, he did all that stuff, and he bought a Mercedes. And at the time, that was a big Mercedes back then. He bought this fancy car. What's he got today? And he's not the only one. Most of them ended up the same way. And today, that's what the record companies do. What does Ja Rule have today? I don't know for certain what he's got today, basically after his jail stint. I will tell you that the last time I remember seeing Ja Rule, this tells you how far I go back, not tracking this guy. The last time I remember Ja Rule, there was a special on MTV. I believe it was MTV. I hope it was MTV and not VH1. You all can correct me because, you know, I'm totally out of the loop about that kind of stuff. But it was either MTV. I want to say it was MTV, and they were talking about, like, I don't know if it was, like, Behind the Music or something, but they were talking to all these different rappers who were saying Missy Elliott and Snoop Dogg and whatnot about where their money went. And they were talking about how they didn't get any money from the record companies and whatnot, and all your real money is made merchandising and touring. And I'm seeing them talking to Ja Rule. I'm not crossing up my specials here. But I'm seeing them. Ja Rule is sitting in a room with nothing but older white men. And they're all sitting up here with this special Jaguar catalog, telling him that they can build this Jaguar specifically to his specifications, whatever he wants, whatever color outside, interior trim, accessories, the whole nine yards. We can build this thing however you want it built. And he's just sitting there cheesing. And all the old white men are just sitting around him cheesing. I'm saying, don't you understand that after they buy him this car, he's never even going to look at the contract he's signing? All he's thinking about is how many females he will be able to pick up with a snap of his fingers once he gets his hands on that car.
Entertainers, black entertainers, been up for 50 years, though. I remember in that movie Cadillac Records, where they're talking about Muddy Waters. And they showed him, he was asking Chess for, like, his royalties and his money after his record sale fell off. He's like, Cadillacs cost money. Everybody in the record company had a Cadillac. But nobody knew what was going on with their contract and with the money. They didn't care after they got the Cadillac. He was screwing all the women and having all the babies and living up high on the hog and didn't know nothing about his royalties and where they were going and how he was going to get paid. Gave him a car, and that was all he cared about. It was it. Boom, I got a Cadillac. I'm gone.
Understand something. Now, since, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein, look it up. The law dictates how you have to divide the monies for a song and music and publishing and whatnot. It dictates how you have to divide it. it does not dictate the amount. And even if you qualify for royalties, the law doesn't, the law says you have to get them, or at least the statutes and the court rulings say you have to get something. It does not dictate how much you get. It just says you have to get something. And getting a check in the mail every month for $85 ain't going to cut it. When you're looking at these people's returns and they're getting $500,000 or $1 million 20 years later. Understand something. The only reason Michael Jackson filed bankruptcy to get his creditors off his back. That's a legal maneuver, the same way that Donald Trump did. It wasn't because he didn't have money. Well, Never Never Land was a mess. Michael was a strung out dope fiend. That's what he did with all his money. He had so much money, he just got strung out on it. He was never broke, and if you don't believe me, ask Sony. Why am I saying that? Because Sony had YouTube put a damn block on my Michael Jackson tribute video. Had never had a problem before then. Michael died, and next thing you know, I'm putting up a video that has Michael's music just playing clips from it with my voice behind it. Don't you know that they locked down on it? They couldn't have done for the music because my voice was talking over it, which means somebody stopped and listened to it and said, hey, you don't know this guy, mark this video. So if you don't believe Michael was making money up until and after he died, all I can say is ask Sony. They believe it. They believe it for real, and they reached out and touched me.
Wow.
You are the authority of black, but you are not the authority of that song. We got you. And I was like, oh, not even for Brother Kane do a tribute? For like draw a picture of Michael, get on the street corner and tribute all you want. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Oh, as always, sir, black first. I'll go back to listen.
Black first, I'll go ahead and put Jack on hold here. Since he wasn't trying to fall off the line, let me go ahead and mark him there. And no, the freight train rolls on here at the Black Channel. Let's grab caller from the 682. You're live with the Black Channel.
Can I be heard?
Yes, you can be heard.
I am just listening in. Thank you.
She's just listening in. Okay, they did it to me again. That's quite right. I've given up on the concept that I'm going to be able to get Blog Talk to automatically put you all in listener queue, so I'm just rolling with the punches here right now. There's a lot of punches coming. I'm not too big on that, but it is what it is. Caller from the 312, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Yo, son, what's good?
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, I called in yesterday.
Okay, brother, I'm not sure what's going on with your phone there, but I need for you to talk to us. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, Sally, I'm calling in from Chicago.
Okay, brother, what's on your mind?
Nothing much. I was listening to the conversations going on, talking about the black business thing, and the conversation sort of just drifted away from that. So I was just want to say something about that, if that was fine to do so.
I didn't think the conversation drifted away from it, but okay.
I mean, a little bit, but, because there was other topics being discussed, but that's fine. We have to be, better customers to the black businesses and everything that we, and everything that do exist. Everybody talks about black business, they have bad customer service, they have this, they have that, but we as black people, we go into those businesses with a bad attitude towards that business. They're going to treat us this way, they're going to treat us that way. We don't give those businesses a chance to prove themselves. Like myself, I have a t-shirt company, it's a clothing line that I've been working on and been doing this since July, and just started getting things out since November. Now something comes up, there's a problem with whatever customer comes and says, hey, I need this or whatever, I got the wrong thing. Or I got the wrong size, I didn't know. I said, they hit me up and they say, hey, I need this. And I just go, okay, send that back to me, I'll send this out to you. And everything goes smoothly. you know, I do whatever it is I need to do for the people that I'm looking for to buy from me, you know. And then I have to do all of the administrative stuff and the marketing and all of that other stuff too. So there's a lot on my plate, and just like with every other black business, there's a lot on their plate. And there's still a lot of racism going on in that, you know, in as far as moving up into the upper echelon of certain businesses, because we don't control many of the distributors that provide people with the goods and stuff that they're looking for their businesses. So we have to pay a little bit more than, say, the Korean guy, or say the Jewish guy, or the Mexican guy, or whoever. We're not in control of that, so we have to be able to build those things so that we can control those things. And we do that by supporting our businesses and being better customers to them, so that they can have the capital, so that they can start pooling those things together. You know, it's like we call group economics, but we don't practice those things. You know,
economics at all. We practice personal interest. And what we do is we try to figure out, where can I get what I need today for myself? We don't ever think, okay, what's in the best interest of the collective, and have I been practicing that? Black people have been in the single most precarious, dangerous, and threatened position of all people in human history, and specifically American history, but we don't act that way. Now, the Japanese got put in internment camps. Do they act like Americans today, or do they act like Japanese people? The Jews got put in concentration camps. Do they act like Germans, or do they act like Jewish Germans? I didn't even say German Jews. I said Jewish Germans. And they carried the lessons from those experiences. We as black people were,
and they said it wasn't going to happen to them again.
Well, we were in servitude for 400 years. Tell me what lessons we carried out of that. And I know if you actually carried out a lesson from that experience, because your behavior has changed. We were all kumbaya before you put us on those plantations. Now I'm looking at you kind of funny. Whenever I see any of you come through here, I'm looking at you kind of funny now. Because I'm remembering everything that happened. You came at me. Everything you do, I'm always remembering. It's kind of funny style, because I understand that there's something behind that. But we are so desperate. What a major part of this is that we are so desperate as people to put the shame and ignominy of slavery behind us. We don't want to remember slavery.
Yeah.
We don't want to remember all the things that happened from it. We want to believe that it was another people, that wasn't us.
Like that wasn't, you know, my great-grandfather. You know? Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Wait. Beyond that, not just that or not, it was your great-grandfather. That wasn't you.
No, it was just a reference point.
Understand something. You've had, what, 20 black males, unarmed black males, gunned down by the Chicago Police Department in, what, the last 5 years?
About, yeah.
And, I mean, that's you. Trayvon Martin and Jordan Russell Davis, that's you. That's me. George Zimmerman only got Trayvon because Trayvon was the one who was there. But if it had been you or me, he would have tried to do that us. Jordan Russell Davis, Michael Dunn killed him because that was the one he could get to. But he didn't kill him because he had some special animosity to him. He saw himself as a soldier in a war. If you don't believe me, go take a look at that link that I put up yesterday, about how black children are put, black kindergartners and first graders are suspended and punished more than any other group. How the hell can you be 13% of the population, and at 5 and 6 years old, you're getting the exact same punishments that they're getting at 15 and 16? That's because every one of those teachers sees themselves as soldiers in a race war.
Right.
And they know,
you know,
exactly
some of the things.
The enemy is. Those people know exactly who their enemy is, and they're not making any bones about it. And what I'm saying is that if we had truly soaked up the lessons, not just of slavery, but if you want to go into racism, white supremacy, if you want to go into that, the system has never gone away.
It's just changed and adapted to the times.
it transmogrified from chattel slavery to racist
mass incarceration
to Jim Crow to Jim Crow slash segregation to the white supremacist slash prison industrial complex slash gentrification economic plantation that we live on today. I mean, it's simply become more sophisticated. It never went away.
Right. Like say, Michelle Alexander laid that out in her book.
Now, you will find more about racism and white supremacy. You will get less denial from white people than you will from black people. Somebody argue with me on that. White people will acknowledge racism and white supremacy faster than black people will when you talk about the mechanisms of it. When you talk about through their behavior, white people will acknowledge it. Black people, we acknowledge when it's kicking my ass.
Right.
Understand something. It's kind of like that joke about when your neighbor loses his job, it's a recession. When you lose your job, it's a depression.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you get with white supremacy, that's your problem. When I get hit with white supremacy, America's a racist place.
Right. Sucks to be you, is basically what they're saying. And, you know, that's you're right. If you talk about white people saying, you know, acknowledging that this is what we've done to you. I mean, you can have look no further than Tim Wise. That guy's been talking about it for I don't know how long. So I discovered him in 2007. So it's like 7 years ago that I started hearing his lectures and stuff about how, like you said, the mechanisms of what white supremacy and white privilege and all of those things, how they work and how they worked and, you know, work to the advantage of white people and to the disadvantage of black people, specifically designed to be that way. So when I speak on those things, people look at me like I'm crazy. They say, well, you can't really say that, man. That's not true. I'm like, dude, all you got to do is look it up. It's right there in front of you. All you have to do is read. Is there, you know, the Freedom of Information Act puts everything out there on the table for you. All you have to do is read words.
They don't
want to
see that because if they acknowledge it, and can we just be honest about it here, they are afraid because if they acknowledge it, like the first caller said before, their number one priority is empowerment. Their number one priority is how many women can I bed? And if I acknowledge what you're saying, you think they're saying we should be empowered. But all he heard was, I can't sleep with her?
Right.
Wait a minute. This will lower my chances. I can't do that.
Right.
This will lower my chance. I can't do that, man. I got no black empowerment. No, I'm against black empowerment. And that's what you end up with. We're the only people who will trade empowerment for panties. We trade power for panties every damn day.
Yeah, I told a friend of mine 10 years ago, and I told him, I said, if we really understand what's happening out here, the one thing that we really know that we're going to have to do, and that's the reason why progress is never really made, is that we're going to have to confront our own, and we're going to have to confront our own in a real way, and we're not prepared as a people to do that. Because the thing is, we don't want to have to go there. You know what I mean? It's like we know there's certain sects of people there's certain groups of our people that profit from things being the way that they are right now. This isn't good for the whole, but the few, they love it, and they don't want to change that, and they will fight us in order to keep it this way. So that's one thing that I think a lot of people, when they come to an understanding of what's going on out here and what's going on in the real world and reality of the situation, that's the one thing that they sort of kind of understand, and it halts progress. You know, we switch our mode of thinking into, okay, well, we just going to have to wake all of them up then. No, we can't. We can't wake them all up. Some people are just too far gone in their ignorance to understand where we need to be as a people. We should be
a lot
further ahead.
The problem is that we keep saying we need to wake these people up. Mine is the first broadcast, the only one anywhere that said stop saying we need to wake everybody up because of two reasons. Number one, everyone cannot be saved. And number two, they're already awake. There isn't a single black person in America who does not know about racism, white supremacy. Not one. There's not a single black person in America who does not know that when you turn on the 6 o'clock news, the first thing they're going to lead in is how many black men got killed today. There's not a single black person.
Or how many black men killed somebody today.
Yeah, there's not a single black person who does not know that if they see the headline, unarmed police shooting, that it's going to be a black person. Not one of us does not know that that's exactly what we're going to see. So here's the problem. Well, if everybody knows it and everybody acknowledges it and everybody agrees with it, why is it that nothing has changed? Nothing has changed because while everybody knows it and everybody agrees with it and everybody acknowledges it, most of us are too scared, cowardly, preoccupied, avaricious, craven, whatever excuse you want to use to do something about it. We acknowledge that it's there, but what we want to know is how much leeway do I have to dance around this and not actually have to do anything? Because this, if I roll with you, that might get in my way of getting some of these other things over here I want. Because understand
what you're saying.
As
what
a black
you're
male
exactly
and Mona,
mm-hmm.
well, as a black male, and Mona will verify this as a woman who's been with black men, the average black male will die over sex. He will not die
pretty
over
much.
Empowerment, but he will die over some female's draws. And that's not a new thing. That's not something that just cropped up in the last 10, 15 years. Brother, that goes back to the Cotton Club. And
right.
If you all don't know your history, you need to go look into it. That goes back at least that far, at least.
You're talking like the 20s and the 30s, man. Way back. I think it was. But anyway, yeah, it's just exactly what you're saying. You know, and the other thing, the other part of the word you didn't mention was content. You know, if I can get this job paying me, you know, 45, 55K, and I can get some pension that they're still trying to take from me, and I can get this retirement, I can get this, we're content with that. If I can work for the post office for 45 years, I'm good with that. If I can work for the CTA or any transit authority, you know, for 45, 50 years or so, I'm good with that. If I can work here at this office for 50 years, I'm good with that. Black empowerment, no, that's going to take that job away from me. I can't do that. So that's where it is, you know. I decided to strike out on my own last year as I couldn't take them having control over me and my
income
potential.
Okay, now
I couldn't take it no more.
You use the word control.
Uh-huh.
Now, let's replace that with a word that you hear from white people all the time. You said, I struck out on my own because I couldn't take them having control of me. Let's try
right.
that another way. I struck out on my own because you said what I don't want. I don't want them having control. What do you want? I struck out on my own because I want
needed to
freedom.
Exactly.
I want freedom.
No,
I want the freedom to make my own rules that if things are going – my reason for wanting to be self-employed was because I got tired of working at places where I saw stupid things happening, and I had zero control to change it, alter it, move anything. I'm not just talking about coworkers being dumb. I'm talking about business strategies being dumb.
Oh, yeah.
I had a problem
that.
With all those things. We're not putting investment where it should be. We're not investing in infrastructure. Everything is about can we sucker more customers and spend nothing on capital expenditure. I'm working for some of the biggest corporations in the world, and I've got the same complaints that PBS Frontline does, and I got tired of it.
Jason, let me tell you, man. I work for this company. It was a Jewish-owned company. Man, these guys are screwing their customers over left and right. They sold audio equipment, and I went to work for them. I didn't know how this was supposed to go. You know, I didn't know how their business operated. But once I got inside, I was looking like, okay. So So what they would do is they would do a bait and switch online. They would have people, they would offer all kind of audio equipment, and if you know anything about audio equipment, you know, it's rather expensive. And when you see a nice set of speakers that normally cost you $300 and they're online for $150, $149, you're going to jump at that, and that's what they bank on. So they get people to make the purchase, but they don't ever complete the purchase. What they'll do is they'll see all the sales, and they have their salespeople come in and say, "Hey, we just sold that the last of those speakers. But if you want, we'll give you this for this discounted price or whatever." They quote unquote discount the price, then they triple the shipping cost on them, so they make all the difference back, and then send them out these goods. So they never lose. They never lost money. They never screwing their employees over with money. They never paid me straight, you know. And they wanted me to overcharge a brother for a speaker that he brought in for repair. He wanted me to lie to him and tell him that it was sent all the way out back to the manufacturer when it was just taken across town. And, you know, they wanted me to overcharge him by $300. I told him I can't do that, and I quit, you know. I'm like, you're not going to get me on that level with you. I can't do it. And, you know, when I decided to strike it on my own, I had this one thought in my head. The one thought was, excuse my language, but you motherfuckers ain't firing me no more. And I'm done with that. So if I win or lose at what I'm doing, I'll win or lose on my own, you know. And I'm willing to do that. And I'm willing to do the work in order to succeed, and that's what I'm doing. Matter of fact, I got to go holler at some bank people tomorrow, because they didn't do what they were supposed to do Friday. So, you know, like I said, it's just this. You have to be on that level. Like this lady was saying, you have to be willing to put in the 8, 9, 10, 12, 16 hours for yourself rather than these other people, because they don't give a crap about what you do. Oh, you sick, come into work. Oh, it snowed, come into work. Oh, your daughter died, come into work. Nobody gives a crap. Nobody cares, you know.
Yeah,
so
that was a bad thing, too. That happened as well. When you work for a huge company that has unlimited resources, or technically unlimited resources, they have the ability to tell you that. I mean, that used to happen to us all the time, that we used to get edicts that came out. Now, I'm in Louisiana, okay? This is as far south as you can get without being in Mexico. Brother, we close down freeways here when there's 3 inches of snow.
Right.
For the few times it does snow. So, I mean, and it was nothing for them to tell us that we expect you to be here tomorrow, no matter what occurs.
Right.
They used to tell us, even if you have to leave home 2 hours early,
you better be
even if the police say that they don't want people on the roads, we expect you all to be there. Because of telecommunications, you have to be here, because if you're not, then terrible, terrible things could happen, which I understood. Don't get me wrong. I understood that, yeah, terrible things could happen. But I'm saying, if I had to hit that freeway, terrible things could happen to me. So
exactly.
That was the problem I had. That was nothing for an edict like that to come down. So you're just running down all the list of all the things that, you know, it was very happy once you don't have to hear that anymore. I mean, working 16 hours a day doesn't bother you when it was your choice. It does bother you when somebody else told you, "I don't care about your physical safety. You have to be here." Somebody sitting in Southern California on a beach telling me that I have to go through a snowstorm.
And then when you get that, ain't even there.
Yeah, I'm about to say, dude, the only thing I'm waiting for is this snowstorm to die down so I can be on the first thing with wings to fly out to Southern California so you and me can discuss your lack of humanity face to face. But like I said,
exactly.
That used to be a problem all the time. I definitely understand that. I got a bunch of callers here, though. I'll let you go ahead and have the last word.
I don't know if it's okay, but I can just, you know, say what my Facebook page is for my business is, if that's okay.
Well, why don't you send me a private message, okay? And I'll take a look at it. Go ahead and send me one. I'll take a look at it. Thank you very much, brother.
Thanks for having me.
As always. Mona, does it ever snow out there?
We get snow periodically, you know, for about 2 or 3 seconds. And we get snow in the mountains in Big Bear, like 20 minutes away from me. Yeah, we do.
Must be nice. It's been snowing down here like that. It snowed, actually, it was like snow flurries earlier this year. And nobody cares. They don't care. They're like, what is this, the weather report? No, this is the Black Channel. My apologies. Let's see if I can try to get, I'm going to try to mix this up here. I'm going to try to grab somebody who hasn't been waiting quite so long. Caller from the 347, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello?
Hi, you're on live.
I'm just listening. I'm just listening.
Okay. That's all you got to say. It's Blog Talk got us again. Everybody who's on the line, if you're able to, if you're just listening, take a shot at it, roll the dice, try to press one and see if it takes you out of the call queue. I've given up on whatever is happening with this. I've just given up on whatever's happening. Caller from the 510, you're on live with the Black Channel.
This is Jason Black.
Yes, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yes, Jason Black. This is Dan. I'm calling from Fremont, California.
Okay, what was the name again?
Danny.
Hello, Danny, and what's on your mind?
All right, Jason Black, all I got to say is I follow your work, you put in good words, and you got that voice to put it through. All I got to say is I'm a little bit disappointed. I wouldn't say as much towards the Black women, but just Black people in general, where it's very hard to talk with certain ones because right now I'm going to a barber college because I want to go into business. The point of my thing is, like, how do you talk to certain Black people that don't get it, but they're around you all the time?
I don't.
Mm.
Brother,
yeah, I
understand something,
yeah.
And Mona will tell you this. You got two people on the line right here working for yourself, building your own business. Both of us will tell you because she was doing it I was doing it almost as long as she has. And we both had varying degrees of success. And there's one thing that we will tell you. If we could wake up tomorrow and be 20 years old all over again, probably the number one thing we would change was to not associate with people who were not going where we were going.
Yeah.
If you and I are on the same road, going in the same direction, on the same bus, at the same speed, I ain't got nothing for you. I don't have anything against you. I just don't have anything for you. And that's real talk.
Yeah.
Brother, you are going to spend the rest of your life, the valuable commodity that you have in this world is your time, not your money. Your money is a byproduct of how you spent your time. You show me your bank account and I'll be able to see how you spent your time. Now, if you are wasting your time, understand something. There is nothing wrong with sex, okay? Sex is a perfectly wonderful thing. The problem comes when you let the sex get in the way of your priorities. I don't care who you're in bed with. Are you in bed with somebody who increases your power, wealth, and influence? Because you can get sex anywhere. And when sex becomes a substitute, not a byproduct, but a substitute for wealth and influence, and you tell yourself that, well, I don't have any money, but I can get some draws, so I'm okay. When you formulate that sentence in your mind, you're a problem. I didn't say you have a problem. I said you're a problem. You're a problem when you say that. It's not just a bad thing. You've got a fatal disease. So the first thing you need to do is make sure that all people who are around you are people who are enhancing what you've got. I don't care if you only got – let me tell you right now. I can name the number of people that I've talked to socially on the phone in the last 7 days on one hand. and the number of people that I would call a real true friend out of those four people, one. Now, I've talked to at least 40 or 50 people this week in the last 7 days. And only one of those is somebody I would consider to be a friend that I would speak to for an extended period of time. Everybody else, get in, get and get out. Not because I'm a jerk, not because I'm difficult, but because I understand what my time is worth. And I'm not going to sit here and let you waste that. So, brother, if you find yourself surrounded by people who do not understand the language you are speaking, I don't care if it's only one other person. Don't waste your time with other people. Don't waste your time with them. What are they doing around you? Why are you in a situation where they stay around you? If you're at a school and there's nothing but idiots there, time for a new school.
What if you already put in tuition and you're already 5 months in?
Yikes.
That's a
Can I answer that? Can I answer that question?
Sure.
Oh, please.
You're a barber. Am I correct? You're going to barber school?
Yeah, in Oakland.
Okay, this is what you have to do.
Okay.
You have to go inside. You can be cordial to everybody, but you're going to have to separate yourself. That's like me working in the salon with 15 people. I don't do a lot of people too well. But when I walk in, I'm cordial, and I'm in there to provide a service and get paid for it. My customers are not my friends, and I don't care where they live, where they work. So you're going to have to go in there and, you know, take yourself away from it. Be there, but don't be there. Stay focused on what you're trying to achieve, not trying to make friends, and handle your business. And here's the problem. When we serve the community, we want to be liked, but we can't be liked. We have to handle our business. And as we handle our business, we become respected, and then they'll like us. And then some people won't, but that's not your agenda. Your agenda is to go to school, get your license, and get paid. And anything that deviates from that, you have to destroy that.
Let me ask you a question here, because this is something I need to know that goes off of what she just said wonderfully. How many friends do you have?
Right now, I cut everybody off.
Okay, but that's not a number.
Zero.
Okay. That's not good either, by the way.
Because, well...
We don't want to have 1,000 friends, because there's no way you can have 1,000 friends, but you don't want to have zero either. So if you got zero, we might want to check you a little bit closer. How old are you?
24.
Okay, well, you're right about that area we want you to be in. You say you're in school for cutting hair. Do you make any money at it now on your own?
I cut family. That's it, really.
Okay.
That's it.
Once you start making money on your own, you won't be asking any of these other things. But in the meantime, here's what you need to be doing. What she was saying there about sticking with yourself and whatnot, you need to be focusing on, okay, I want to be the student in the class who knows how to cut hair at that professional level 10 weeks before everybody else does. So my question for you is, what are you doing to get yourself at that level so that you're not worried about having associates? Because people are attracted to somebody who is producing. As long as you're still a student, you're not producing yet. So what are your plans to get from being at this student stage to producing? Because you could still be in their class, but not a student. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Mark Zuckerberg didn't even graduate. And yet him and his buddies, you saw the movie The Social Network, they didn't even graduate, but they were running rings around everybody else, and Facebook was up and going. So my question to you is, don't see that as a hair salon or barber school. See that as laying the groundwork for your enterprise, and you do not wait until you are out of the school to be about your business. What are you doing to be about your business right now?
Right now, I'm shadowing all my instructors, all of them, including the ones that already have businesses. I watch them closely. It comes from either them helping customers, cleaning around, and me just listening with an open mind about everything that they have about their business. So when I get a business, I know everything from A to Z.
Can I ask you a question?
Please.
Mona, chip in whenever you want to.
Are you aware of the apprenticeship program?
Yes, I was told by my instructor about that.
Okay, that might be something that you could look into, because under the apprenticeship program, you only have to go to school, I believe, one day a week, and then you can go into a barbershop and make money. I think they work on commission. I'm not sure how it works, you know, from city to city. But you go to theory one day a week, and you go into the salon, and you cut hair, and you get paid for it. I know it takes a little longer. Is your barber school 9 months?
Yeah, 9 months.
I know it'll take 2 years, but you will be having an income as well. So that might, you know, help you out. But anytime you're dealing with the public, you're going to have some kind of hardship. So you're just going to have to up and up.
True, and I've experienced that enough in Oakland, and it's always makes me stronger. But the reason why I want to still focus on my school is because I want to know everything from the beginning of haircut, like the history, who made it, who founded it, from the current now position that haircutting is at right now. I want to know like the old school and the new school. So that's why I'm shadowing some of the 50-year-old haircutting people, the 60-year-olds, 70-year-olds, because they're the ones that tell me everything I need to know about haircutting, talking to people, making a business, how to get a name for your business, go to City Hall and get the name and everything. So those are the people I kind of cling to more than it's my current peers, which they talk about smoking
weed. Let me tell you something here, okay?
Okay.
What do you want to do with this knowledge that you're going to the school for? What's your ultimate goal? What are you trying to do?
To make a professional barbershop.
Okay, so you want to have a professional barbershop. How many of the people who are in class with you, from what you have seen, are seriously trying to do that? Because everybody's in there saying that's what they want. How many of them are actually in there doing what's necessary and demonstrating the character trait attributes necessary to get to that point? How many?
Jason, honestly, it's sad. At least 80% of them don't even give a crap. They're there to get hours, clock in, clock out, get some hours in, cut some hair, and then leave, and then smoke. That's it.
Okay. Now, do you know what that means then? I want you to start thinking about something differently here, and Mona will co-sign me on this. You used a term earlier. You said, I'm watching more of the older people and shadowing them much more than my peers. Brother, if you're the only one who's in there trying to start a real business seriously, you don't have any peers.
Mm.
And that's the first thing you need to accept. You can't believe it because Jason Black or Mona Lisa says it. You have to believe that because it's true. You don't have any peers. Let me tell you something, brother. I respect a lot of people up there, but when I grab this microphone and start speaking on black economics, I am without peer.
Mm.
Not because anybody else said it. It's because that's just the way it is.
Mm.
Now, and I work at it harder than anybody else. I'm more dedicated than anybody else. My track record speaks for itself. I don't have to say anything more than that. If you want to be great at something and excel at it, first thing you have to understand is that if nobody else sees things the way you are and nobody's trying to go to the same place you're going, which is why I said at the beginning, you don't have any peers. If we looked on that bus and you're the only one there, you have to start looking at people differently. I mean people as a group, as a species. And you are going to have to get comfortable being with yourself, because the more you try to mix with them, understand, that's what the definition of mixing is. You can't mix with them and at the same time not become contaminated or admixtured. You can't do that. Didn't say you have to be unsociable, which is what you're concerned about. It's not about being sociable. Your job is to get learn as much as you can, get the one out of there so that you can get this. The end goal should be, how do I get in that barbershop? Learning history is a great thing, kid. I'll tell you that. You got the internet if you want to learn the history of haircutting. If your goal is start a business, start a business. If your goal is to be a historian, go to the Library of Congress. If you're trying to make money and start a business, get to starting your business, because the economic landscape is not getting more forgiving out there. And if you don't believe me, there's a woman who's on the line with you right now who will verify that. And I don't even cut hair in California, and I can tell you that simply from the numbers I've seen. It's not getting easier to do that. If you think you got another 5 years to get after that money, good luck on that, man. You're 24. You need to be after it as hard as you can, as fast as you can, as tough as you can right now. You don't have a day to waste. You don't have another 5 years to dance around. Me and Mona did. You do not. You don't have it. All that was squandered. Her generation, part of mine, squandered. You don't have it. You got to do like them illegals and everybody else, man. You got to be after it right now. You don't have any time to waste. I didn't say drop out of school. I said get yourself in that barbershop of your own as quickly as you can. Right now, you don't have the knowledge or experience yet. Get the knowledge and experience as quickly as humanly possible should be the thing. You don't need to know the annotated history of haircutting to get that knowledge and experience. You just don't. No disrespect, but that sounds more like a stalling tactic and buying time than an actual reason. If you want to be in business, go into business.
May I say something?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
You're 24 years old. You need to be cutting hair on a continuous basis. You want to cut everybody. I don't care if it's for free or what it's for, a small price. You need to get your name out there now because you're starting kind of late. I started at 33 years old. While you have friends, while you have associates, while you have people that know you, you want to make them your customers. So I would say for you to get into the apprenticeship program, because school is only going to teach you the basics. You want to get around other barbers that are going to intimidate you to the point where you're going to want to be good. You look at their cut and you'd be like, oh, no, I got to do this. Because they're going to be the people that show you. It's not going to be the older people that show you. It's going to be the people that are in competition with each other. And inside a salon, it is a friendly competition. And that's how you get better and better. You're going to have to pay those student loans off if you have a student loan. Or a school loan, and your perfect thing would to be in a salon, in a barbershop, getting that experience, getting your name out there, and handling your business. Because school will tell you that when you graduate, you're going to make $50,000. It takes years to build a clientele. I can't tell you how many years I sat hoping somebody would let me do their hair. So they're going to give you this false illusion that as soon as you graduate, you're going to be making $50,000, $60,000, and that's a lie. You have to get out there and promote yourself and hone your craft and cut until you can't cut anymore.
Mm.
And that one day of fear.
There's socializing to be done, but it's not going to be at that school.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
I know you're not really a people person, and understand something, brother. I am the least people person you will ever meet in your life. I am the total opposite of a people person, and yet I've got dozens of people on the phone, hundreds of people listening, and thousands of people who'll be watching and commenting afterward. At some point, we have to be adults and just say, you know what, we have to become disciplined at it. Those people at that school, if there's not one of them who's good, if there is one of them who is serious and going where you're going, you and that person need to strike up a partnership now. and you need to be spending your time doing what Vince McMahon did when he got into the wrestling business, eating it, drinking it, sleeping it, breathing it, everything. How can we get us hit to cut today? Remember what I said at the beginning of the broadcast. Don't come to me with your problems. Don't come to me with, well, we couldn't get no heads today because every car dealership in America, salesmen get fired every day because they told the business that couldn't get any customers. Dude, I can't keep you all here as employees if I'm not selling cars. You put an ad in the paper at my own expense. No, you don't have to spend your money. Can you borrow it from somebody else? But you can't stay working here if you're not selling cars. I got the inventory. I spent the $3 million to build this dealership and to have my license with Ford, GM, Toyota, whoever. I did what I'm supposed to do. You came to me for a job. This is what you're supposed to do. I bought the TV advertising. I bought the big floppy balloon out front. Your job is to get people to buy this car. And if 10 people walked on this lot, 8 of them better have bought a car. And if they didn't, you need to explain to me why. But the numbers that I require for you to sell ain't moving. So your job, young man, is, as Mona said, you're supposed to be out there hitting that street. I don't know if you got to go to high schools. You may not be a religious person. You better find a church to be at or somebody who is there. Guess what? Churches are full of lots of things. I see a bunch of heads in there. Somebody needs something cut. I don't care where you do it or how you do it. That's your problem to figure out. But understand something. The people who are going to fail at this are the people who are going to wait for somebody to bring them something.
Good point.
Mona, am I wrong?
You're absolutely correct. And if you are a friend to Jason on Facebook, you know, hook up with him and he can get you in contact with me, and I'm always available to talk to you about it because I've been doing this for 22 years.
Mm. Sounds good. Oh, yeah, Jason, I did add you today, though.
Okay, well, send me a message so I know who you are. As I've shown people before, I wake up after a broadcast is over. Can only do this for 4 or 5 hours. I will have over 100 notifications and a dozen messages in my inbox. So just send me a message on Facebook and let me know that you're the kid we talked to about the haircut, and I'll see about getting you in touch with Mona because she's right out there where you are. She's been where you've been at least a few dozen times. So get some information from somebody who's actually going where, who's actually at where you're trying to get to.
And Jason's like, I got one final question, though.
Okay, make it quick.
Okay, got you. Do you find it kind of odd? Well, okay, I never really hanged around black people in my life. I was usually raised around white people, so I already know the basics of sarcasm, body language, and all those things. And it's like a kind of new adventure for me to be around black people, so when I go to Oakland, I kind of get this Oreo comment a lot. So it's like I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be laughing or not take it seriously, or, and then like I tell them like it's just my parents are from Ghana and I was born here in California, and you know there comes this this black and African like cutoff point where you're African, you stay there. We're black, we've been here long enough, we've suffered, and your people shouldn't judge us because we're not doing what we need to do, and it's the white people that are holding us back, and there's nothing we can do, it's hopeless, and that type of energy I get a lot when I'm around certain black people at the college. So I'm not sure, you know, what do I take from that? Like, do I be serious and say, why don't you all just shut the hell up, do what you need to do, and I'll do what I need to do? Or should I have that attitude? Or I'm not sure what they want me to do is to get angry at them or something for saying that.
Back when I was your age and, you know, back when bodybuilding was really big, they were asked here about what do you do to get, you know, as big as the big guys are and whatnot. And I think it was Sean Ray who said it, and he said that how you got asked about intermediate training, and he said, "Do I start with intermediate training and whatnot?" And Sean Ray said, "If you want to look like a professional bodybuilder, you train like a professional bodybuilder. You don't start light and work your way up. You train just like we do." Brother, when you're going somewhere, you don't waste time with people who are not going where you're going. And you don't regard their thoughts or their comments. I want you to remember something that a black man said to me. I've said it before, and you need to remember this. The people, when it comes to people making comments like that because you're building, take a look at, number one, consider the source. And number two, the people who care don't count. And the people who count don't care. You got that?
Got it.
Me and Mona don't care about mess like that. We're people who count. The rest of those folk you're talking about, they're not helping you. They're not contributing. They're not anything. They just got critiques to make and criticism and sarcasm to give. Man, y'all ain't put no money into nothing. You haven't helped me cut one head. Somebody who helps you cut heads, their opinion matters. Somebody who contributed nothing and isn't trying to, brother, their opinion don't matter for nothing. Understand?
Understand.
You don't sit up here and regard the opinions or the thoughts of somebody who is not contributing. You don't ever do that. Because those people have been doing that from the day that they were born. That's what they have been doing their whole lives, is they sit up here and throw comments and throw shade. The only thing they don't do is produce anything. And you will be sitting here talking to those same people. And Mona will tell you. She will tell you. She's got 15 years on me, and I got 14 or 15 years almost on you. And she will tell you that the same people that we passed 20 and 30 years ago who were talking mess about us, those people are still where they were when we left them. The only criticism that you ever keep in mind is somebody who is where you want to be. That's the only criticism you ever listen to. I went to Dr. Claude Anderson to get an education. I went to Don Peebles to get an education. I went to Pulley to get an education. And when they talked, the black authorities shut up. Because those men, knowledge-wise, and in Don's case financially, they are where I'm trying to be. Actually, in the case of all those men, actually, financially, they are at where I'm trying to get to. Whatever criticism that they got of me, if my knowledge was so sufficient to get me where they were, I'd be there by now. I'd already be there. So if they made a sideways comment at me like that, maybe I'd be checking myself a little more. But those men would never make a comment to you like that, so you're okay. The people throwing shade, brother, take a look at them, consider the source, and ask yourself, is that where I'm trying to be and what I'm trying to do? Because if it's not, why did I waste my time even listening to them?
Mm.
That's a skill that you're going to have to develop, is the skill of ignoring people. And you're going to have to filter out most of that noise so that you can hone in and listen to the people who are actually helping you and going where you're trying to go. Thank you very much for calling us, brother. Please send me a message. I will put you in touch with Mona. From the 973, you're live with the Black Channel.
Sir, how are you?
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Caesar. I'm originally from Newark, New Jersey, but I'm in Ohio right now, Toledo, Ohio.
What's on your mind, black man?
You were Mona. Well, this is my first time calling. I'm pretty new to your videos on YouTube. But I'm inspired by a lot of things you were saying. And basically my question is, what advice do you have for a person like myself who has a lot of different skills, but it seems like I'm surrounded, but one, I don't have like the finances to really do what I really want to do. And when I do certain like business ventures and things like that, I get surrounded by, like in one of your videos, you said you call them like homie hookup people. And you know, what advice you have for somebody who, like I said, I have a lot of skills. Like I'm a web designer, app developer. I know how to, you know, produce music, like use Pro Tools, things like that. There's a bunch of different things I have skills and talent at. And but when I tell people, you know, charging for services, oh, you know, I don't have that much, and da da da. And I pretty much do what I heard you say in another broadcast. Like, you know, my price is my price, and that's it. And I hit people with that, and, you know, I never hear from them again. And I guess I wasn't supposed to hear from them, but it just seems like I don't get any business at all. So, and it just seems like I really just don't know what to do. And I'm getting older. Like, I wish I had that luxury of being as young as that last call you had. But I'm, you know, I'm 31 years old, and it's just like I'm not getting any younger, and, you know, I just feel like I'm at a new point in my life. Me and my wife, we separated, and it's just like I'm trying to do, you know what I mean? I'm trying to, like, do my thing, and I just don't, my biggest fear is just, like, I see a lot of dudes that's, like, in their 40s and 50s that I remember when I was, like, a teenager were, like, I guess where I am now, and they live with their parents in their basement or, you know, with the, you know, whatever, and I would hate to be that, like, for that to be me. So, like, do you have any advice for somebody, like, my age? That's just, you know,
okay,
trying to do that.
Me and Mona will be all over this one. First of all here, before I say anything else, you got a lot going on. But if you're not able to produce anything out of it, then that calls into question the quality of what you have going on.
Okay.
There's an old saying, jack of all trades, master of none.
Yes, sir.
And from what you described so far, there's no way, there is no way that you are excelling at all those things. There is no way that, what city are you in? You say you're in Ohio?
Toledo right now, yeah. Toledo, Ohio.
Okay. There is no way that you are the best person in Toledo at Pro Tools, cutting hair, and grilling hot dogs, and whatever else. There's no way that you are excellent at all those things. You might be passable. I mean, look, I understand, okay, as a black male, I understand, I get it, that you had to do what you had to do to survive out here, man. You picked up a lot of skills along the way, or at least things that you think are skills. But what you're asking now is, okay, how do I, you're doing what every black man, every male, and Steve Harvey talked about this, and as much as I may disagree with other things that he said, he was absolutely right when he said that when black men get in their 30s, a switch flips for us, or at least for many of us. That switch flips, and we go from chasing draws to trying to get our money right. That's what's happened to you. Gone from chasing draws to saying, wait a minute, I'm not getting no younger. I get my paper together. Because I can't live like this for the rest of my life. And that's the right thing to do. But you need to understand the process by which that works. You need to choose one thing. Maybe two, but one thing that you excel at and that you do better than anybody else in Toledo, because that's the only way that you're going to be able to make a substantial salary or charge a high fee for something. You can't charge a high fee if you're not the best at what you do. If you are average, people will want to negotiate with you, which is why I explained to the young man yesterday. If all you are is passable, if all you are is that dude that will call it, I heard he knows a little something about cutting boards and carpentry, then guess what? Everybody, they don't have any respect for you. You have not shown people that you excel. Show them that you excel, and that is where your high rates will come from. So out of all those things you named, you need to choose one, maybe two, that you can hone to perfection, and that people around Toledo know this is the man that you call for this. And we don't argue with him over the price because he's got too many customers on the line. He's not going to argue with us. The price is the price. If you're not able to get that price, brother, it's because the quality of what you're doing is in question. And needs to be undeniable. The price is the price is a product of how well you provide a service. So you need to choose one of those two things and get that perfected. After you get that perfected, come back to the other. Tools is a wonderful thing, okay? Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Pro Tools, if you can learn how to use it, because it does have a steep learning curve. But if you've learned how to use Pro Tools, that's great. That's wonderful. You opening the music studio or something?
Say that last part. I didn't hear that last part. I'm sorry.
Are you opening a music studio or something?
Well, here's the thing. Before I left Toledo, when I was in Jersey, I actually had like an in-home studio, but I actually had credits, and that's why I was like
console?
I charged a certain price.
Did you have a console?
No, I had a
Okay,
like
that's what you have
like
to say.
$500 for my computer.
Brother, that's all you have to say is no, I didn't. Now you understand.
No, sir,
you don't have a studio if you don't have a console.
Okay.
I'm not beating up on you. It's just time for some cold hard facts.
No, I hear
you. You got a hustle. You had a hustle, but you didn't have a studio.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that, remember what I said about perfection. Brother, if you don't know how to work a console, you're not going to be able to work with your Tamaras, and even if they're cast-offs from Destiny's Child or whatever. They're going to walk in there and immediately see you're not ready for prime time. And there's too many other people who will buy a console and do that. The reason that you didn't buy a console is because you ain't got $100,000 laying around.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm about to say, let's just cut to the chase. The reason you didn't do that is because you don't have $100,000 lying around. I'm not beating up on you for that, okay?
Yeah,
that's a still chunk of change.
Yeah.
Even if you had a console tomorrow morning, how long would it take for you to learn how to work that thing? You'd have to go to school to work.
I'm pretty quick. I mean, yeah.
I don't care how quick you are. You would have to go to school to learn how to work that thing to proficiency. Because they're going to tell you that. What are you going to do when somebody walks in there and says, I want a specific type of sound? What you're going to be hoping and praying for is that they have a music that they've already heard that they can bring you a CD of so that you can imitate that. But what if it's one that's in their head? And all they can keep telling you is, nah, that don't sound right. It needs to sound more boxy. Nah, that don't sound right. I'll give you all something to think about here. You can go listen to it for yourselves. There's a song, actually a whole album, by, it's a rock group called Disturbed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole bunch of reasons why I started following Disturbed's work. But one of them was their studio work. During the album that they put out when they had Monster, and you all can go look it up, they had Monster and Indestructible. If you go listen to those two songs, and I'm not going to tell you to listen to it, that's up to you, you can do it or not do it. On Indestructible and Monster, go listen to the drums. It's going to be kind of, actually, you can listen to the drums, you can listen to the whole song. You'll notice that there's this difference to it. It has almost what sounds like a slight Z frequency on it.
Mm-hmm.
And now, if you work with those things, you know what I mean by zero frequency. Now, it sounds like it's got a slight zero freak on it. And that's important because what they were doing was they were crafting a sound to it. So even though it sounds slightly different and slightly distorted from every other rock group out there, when you play that song on the radio, if you hear that type of environment on a song again, you'll stop because you'll be like, is that Disturbed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but here's the thing. Putting a zero freak on a song like that, I've never heard of that on a song before. Now, I don't know if that was Draymond who did it. I don't know if that was him or if it was just the engineer who did it. But my point is, if somebody tells you you want a specific type of sound and tell you it's never been done before, they're going to expect you to figure out how to do it, even though the sound is in their head. That's what going to school is for. And knowing how to work that console, and the console is just one part of it, having proper monitors and the whole nine yards. Pro Tools is just one part of it. And yes, there is a lot of software emulation for rack systems, but there's certain instances where there's certain equipment that you're going to need the physical racks, the physical consoles to do it with. An emulator like in the Pro Tools plug-in is not going to do it. As you're aware, there are certain consoles and certain types of rack equipment that have they're still going to have vacuum tubes because people like the sounds from the vacuum tubes better. You're not going to get that from a digital system. It'll emulate it, but it's not going to be quite the same. And what are you going to do with a very demanding customer who's got the money and is not going to do business with you if you don't have that? Or worse, you don't even know what they're talking about. You don't have to get every dime that's out there. That's not necessary. But what I am saying is that I went through all of that to say, now that's everything that you need to know just to craft a new sound. Are you sure that this Pro Tools education is worth it? How much more time and money are you going to have to invest to get a fully functional, fully working studio up and going, even if it's at your house, in order that you can actually turn that into a long-term career? How much are you going to have to do?
At least 20. 15, I guess, on like a cheaper end, but I guess
okay.
20.
Well, usually for a studio, you're usually going to have to drop about 50, and that's with used equipment.
Well, when I said 20, I meant the equipment. I wasn't even talking about a location. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's, I'm talking about just the equipment, too. You usually have to drop about 50, and that's on used. Like I say, once you get out there and you actually start trying to buy the equipment, you'll see what I'm talking about. And Sam 7 will back me up on that. We got a lot of black folk out there that got pieces here. They might have 808 here, a cost there, or something like that. But if you want the whole nine yards and everything that you need to get this thing working properly, that's where you're going to run into trouble, and you're going to realize that there will be certain things that even used, nobody's going to budge on their price on. And what I'm saying, more important than that, is how long is it going to take you to get that $50,000 together? And what will you have to do in the meantime to get that? What I'm saying is that you're saying that the clock is ticking. If it takes you another 5 years, was this the best use of our time? And I'm not going to tell you yes or no. I'm saying that that's the kind of critical thinking that you need to do. How much time and money will I have to invest in this to get this up and going properly? And it's not a good get-quick scheme. It's a matter of, are there other things that I excel at that I can get to that profit point that are not going to require as much time and money, that I can excel at but are not going to require quite as much? Because you get to a point where certain things you want to do are no longer feasible or practical.
Yeah, I hear you, man.
So is there something else that you think you excel at that you can have up and going, let's just say, within the next 12 months?
Well, like I said, I'm a web designer, too.
Okay.
And, web designer, I'm good at app development, but I'm not, like, great. Like, I couldn't create, the mobile version of Facebook tomorrow, but I can make like little games and just like that. But I would say web design is more like my strong
thing. Now you say web design, okay?
Yeah.
You say web design. Now that's what you're saying to me.
Mm-hmm.
How well do you know HTML?
I know it like a language, like that's how I speak Spanish or English, rather. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I'm saying, can you sit down and build a website from scratch with HTML? Doing the coding.
Yeah, I actually when I left college, that's actually where I had one. It was I don't want to say the name, but it was I just actually did it all from HTML because that's how I learned from the beginning. It was just all HTML code. I didn't have any other knowledge but that. That's how we learned it.
Okay, and, do you know XHTML?
Not as fluently as I do HTML.
In the words of Pai Mei, then. In the words of Pai Mei from Kill Bill, when he asked her, can you do this? And she said, yes, but not as fast. Then you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Time to hit, hey, welcome to the real world. If you don't know it fluently, you don't know it. Because when your customer asks you to do something and you're groping around, well, how do I do that? Guess what? You don't know it. I won't even, if that's your answer on XHTML, I'm not even going to get into HTML5. I won't even get into that. And I'm certainly not going to go off into Java. We'll just leave that off the table altogether. What I'm saying, however, is if you know well enough to build a website and whatnot, maybe that's the kind of situation that you need to actually drill yourself into, and for the next year become, do they have that Mr. Miyagi and Jean-Claude Van Damme training montage, Rocky V moment, whatever, and spend the next year honing your skills at HTML, or better yet, Java. I mean, if Leo, the homeless dude, can learn the basics of Java in 30 to 5 days, why can't you learn it in 6 months?
I believe I can. Real probably say not sooner. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm about to say, if you can do it sooner, I mean, why can't you do that?
Yeah.
Now, if,
I mean,
you learn Java, if you learn Java, forget being self-employed. I mean, if you learn Java, you're going to have plenty of people offering you a job if you're fluent in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about a candy wrap job either, by the way.
Yeah.
Go take a look into that for yourself. But what I'm saying is, it sounds like you're kind of avoiding some of the higher languages because it's like, well, there's a learning curve. Hey, that's where the money is, because those are the guys who excel. No, you don't necessarily have to learn Perl. That's what you would need to build something like Facebook. No, you don't have to learn Perl necessarily. But, like, say, most of your apps out there are built in Java now.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it we're not at least tackling that? So what I'm saying is, I don't know what you're doing for income right now, but if I were, I mean, in from what I've heard here just alone, if you're good enough that you know HTML, you'll have a lot easier time than the rest of the students are going up to Java.
Mm-hmm.
Do that, and let's kick this thing in high gear.
All right. One last question. I don't mean to, you know, keep going in, but what do you do if I show people my products and stuff like that, and they say, yo, like, if I show people the websites I've done, like, if for you, for example, if I showed you a site and you're like, yo, that's hot, can you give me a website like that, and I do it for you, you know, or like the example, the music that I've produced for people, like, I've, not to, like, Two More Horn and like that, but, like, I produced, like, Naughty by Nature, and, like, artists that were signed like Quincy Jones label, and they hear my track, and they're like, yo, that's hot, like, I need something or whatever. And, like, you know, I tell them, like, okay, I charge this amount of dollars for the website or this amount for a track. And then they're like, I don't know. Like, should I just keep on going or just, like.
Okay. First of all, here's the first thing you need to find out, okay? Are you charging fair price? Because if Mona does a wash and perm for $80, and I'm doing a wash and a perm, the exact same quality of wash and perm for $115. And Mona's got 5 customers and I got 1. Does it take a lot of rocket science to figure out what the problem is here?
Yeah.
Okay, here's my point. My point is, now am I doing a better wash and perm than Mona? Now, if my wash and my perm is $35 better than Mona's, then maybe that $115 needs to stay where it is. But if my wash and my perm is the same as Mona's, but I'm just telling myself it's worth $115, now we got a problem.
Okay.
So the first thing is, you need to go check out who is doing comparable work and what they're charging.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're above them, that may be the problem. If you are the same as them, that may also be a problem, since you're trying to build a name for yourself. You might need to undercut them by, 15-20%.
Yeah.
Because you have not earned the right to charge what they're charging yet. You might need to undercut them and see if that works. If that doesn't work, then the problem is, there's no nice way to say this, if that doesn't work, the problem is you.
Okay.
It's like the guy said, you know, if you wake up this morning and you met one jerk, that's a jerk. If you woke up this morning and met 5 jerks, then the jerk is you.
Yeah,
if you woke up this morning and everybody, you're charging 20% under for what you think is the same quality work as everybody else, and we're still not moving no weight, we need to start looking at ourselves. Maybe our work is not as good. And start asking right. some honest questions of ourselves. But that's exact, if it was me, and like I say, I have worked with paying people for that kind of stuff, and I have built my own websites. I'm not nearly good enough to be able to code one from start to finish, but I don't have to pay for anything. Everything that you see from the Black Channel and 7 a.m., those are all things I made myself. And I don't have to go around and around about it, but what I am saying is that's the kind of thing you need to look at. But if everything is placed and proper and you know that you're not overcharging, the price is the price. Another thing is you need to be careful about where you're getting your customer base from, man. If you're dealing with a bunch of bums who ain't got no money and you're looking for the one who has actually saved some money, that's a problem. You may be looking for customers in the wrong place also.
Yeah, that's,
I know where you're looking
for
customers. I don't know where you're advertising. But if you're dealing with a bunch of people and everybody is looking for the homie hookup, chances are you are advertising in the hood. And maybe it's time for us to get on out of there.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to try that, man.
I'll let you have the last word.
Nice. Thank you for, you know, thank you for all that advice and everything like that. I really do appreciate it. And, you know, I'm going to keep you know, listening and everything like that. And, you know, Black First.
Black First, brother, thank you very much for calling us here. I wish I had the time to sit down and learn Java, Mona. I wish I had the time to sit down and learn it. I really wish I could. When Mark Zuckerberg, when he was in school, in college, and he had his friends with him, when they sat down and did the original, which was not named Facebook at the time, but when they sat down and did the original version of it, and they decided that we want to make this bigger, he had a friend of his, and we're learning a computer program, and his friend told him, he said, "I'll code it for us." And Mark said, "You can't code it. You don't know how to code it. We can't use just C++ or HTML. He said, "We would need some higher language like Perl. This is a programming language called Perl, P-E-R-L. And his friend told him, "Give me this weekend. I'll get it." But his buddy left him and took out. It was actually a little more than just that weekend, but he came back to Mark and gave him a functional version in that higher language of Perl. And that was what got the ball rolling for Facebook. It also got the lawsuits rolling against Zuckerberg later, but guess what? When you got $10 or $12 billion, you can pay off your lawsuits.
Right.
The problem with Black people is we don't get to a point where we can pay off our lawsuits. That's
right.
The problem. Caller
right.
from the 813, thank you very much for your patience. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Black First, Jason, how are you doing? This is Jason calling from Raleigh.
Well, I have to give you preferential treatment. You have the same name. What's on your mind, Black man?
Well, first of all, I just got back from the tournament game, so I'm coming in on the broadcast late. Waste of the evening because those games were terrible. But anyway, yes, my fiance Shantae said hi as well. I had a question. We're looking into getting into I have some friends that are doing some internet businessing, like selling products via the internet. They are selling through shop.com. It's a couple of Black folks that I know. They're into this internet business, selling either beauty products and various other products. What are your thoughts on some of those types of programs? I'm a little skeptical because it kind of, you know, comes off as the pyramid scheme type deal, but they kind of assure me that it's not. I'm still looking at it. What are your thoughts on that?
If it sounds too good to be true, and if it sounds mm-hmm. too similar to something you've already heard, it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what the problem is with human beings? Human beings can stare at something We have the capacity and the ability to keep staring at something that is the polar opposite of what it actually is. We can stare at fire until it becomes water. And we have the ability to stare at water until it becomes fire.
Mm-hmm.
It never became fire. It's still water. But we have the ability to, somebody has the ability to, this is how con men work. Con men understand that if I keep you sitting here long enough, you will eventually just acquiesce. His job is not to convince you. His job is to break down your defenses until you do what he wants you to do. So don't let people sit there and break down your defense. If they cannot clearly and plainly explain to you in plain English how it is that what they are saying to you is not what you've heard before, it's not true. It just isn't.
And that's what I thought, because I'm looking at it, and they're trying to, you know, they're like, no, it's not. And, you know, you got a bunch of people in a room, and you're like, yeah. And then I'm like, okay, so when are you going to ask me for the money? And, you know, eventually.
And they always assure
the
you they're not going to ask for it. That's the crazy part. They always assure you they're never going to ask for it. And let me tell you something. When somebody talks about business and making money, and then you ask them, what's the cost? And they tell you, oh, don't worry about it, about the cost. That's your first sign that there's trouble. And you know how I know? Because I used to teach people how to do that for some of the biggest corporations in this country. And one of the techniques that I would teach them was you never, never, ever lead with the price. You always fill their heads with dreams. Tell them all the great, wonderful things that are going to happen for them if you do what you say. And the very last thing that you ever get into is the price. And by the way, you just whiz by that as quickly as you can.
Right.
But because we stay on the price too long, this person might actually stop and think about it. And that was not my job. My job was to sell these things at an incredible price, by the way. These are not small items. I can't say too much because I'll be giving myself away where I was, and I don't open myself up to liability by saying what the hell they were doing. But I will tell you it's bigger than it's ever been. It costs more than it's ever cost, and the businesses are using it or getting less than they ever got. And I was one of the people who did it. I can't sit here and extricate myself from that. Just like the kid who talked about earlier about the music equipment. I mean, he's taking, hey, look, he's putting himself out there. I'm putting myself out there. I did it too. I was one of those people. Not in what he was doing precisely. Ours was a lot more expensive, a lot more intricate. But I was one of them. So I recognize these techniques because I used them too. Apparently, I used them better than these people did. Apparently, I was much better at it because I'd have sold you. But, and if they're this sloppy about it, then run. Now, let me ask you another question here. This is the more important question. How old are you?
Mm-hmm. 40.
You're 40 years old?
Yes, I'm 40.
What do you do for a living?
I will be retiring from 22 years in the Navy this year.
You have such an incredible advantage over most people.
Yes, I know.
You really do. So what do you want to do with the next 40 years, is the question.
That's what I'm looking to. I want to get into business for myself.
Mona, I think we just found your next husband.
I don't think my fiancé would like that, but anyway.
Oh, snap, I forgot. You did say that earlier, didn't you, Mona? You win some, you lose some. She's back there yelling at him. We got him in trouble already. Sorry, man.
Yeah,
she
was like, What's that?
This is why we don't discuss relationships on the Black Channel, because I break up homes here is what I do. Not even trying. Didn't know she was right. Didn't tell you my fiance was here. Ooh, sorry, man. You did say that, didn't you? Wow.
Sorry,
okay.
She's already peaked game already. That's why she got
well,
me on.
Hey, I mean, this doesn't have to actually be an obstacle here. I mean, don't they have like open marriages out there in California or something? And, you know, just tell them, hey, I'll be the third wheel. At least for a decade here or so. At least we got enough. But I'm trying to help out. Okay, that struck out. Moving right along here, though. But seriously, I mean, now if you're 40 and you got a tremendous amount of advantages.
Mm-hmm.
How financially strapped are you making yourself at this time? Do you have any debt? A house, a car note, daycare,
Just the car note. I've got all my debt down to just the car note, brother.
Okay. What is your credit score like? You don't have to tell me the exact number.
No. It's good.
I'm about to say, now, if it looks like a homicide scene, that's not going to help you.
Put it this way, it's not early morning.
Okay.
It's not early morning. You know that phrase.
Yeah, it's not the dark hours. Well, that's
right,
what
exactly.
I'm sorry, the dark hours in December. Okay, I'm just checking on that. All of that's important because, as Mona said, those will be the two things that you will need. You can't have any debts, and you need to get your credit together so you can start borrowing money. Because the way you go into business, most preferably, is to use other people's money, not your own. You just want to qualify to get your hands on other people's money. But you don't want to need your own if you don't have to. Second thing is, when people ask me about going into business, the first thing I want to find out from you is, what do you want to do with your life?
Right. And that is what I'm looking at. This is the challenge for me. You know, it's been almost 22 years of being told what to do, where to be at, what to wear, you know, how to operate. You know, I even basically got my degree doing the same job that I did in the military, which is human resources. So I have a degree in human resources. And
which is totally and absolutely useless.
Exactly. You know, but that's what I've done in the military. And it's like, and to be honest with you, I'm tired of being around people like that in the sense of, you know, folks are complaining all the damn time and, you know, they got issues and, you know, it's just, you know, and just like you were saying before, when you talk about snow, it's like, okay, even here in the military, out here in Raleigh, we had like a lot of snow out here. And it was like a question of, well, if you can come to work, come to work. I'm like, the roads are not safe. What do you mean? You know, we need you, that type of stuff. It's just worn on me to where I'm like, okay, I need to figure out what I want to do and, you know, how I want to do it. I really enjoy talking to young people about getting their lives together, okay, young men and women, especially black men and women. Because I do believe that there are a lot of folks lost, okay? That is part of the reason why I, you know, contributed to you-know-who's freaking project, okay? Because I thought that they would, you know, the way he basically put it out there, it made it seem like he was really trying to do something. And now it's kind of, you know,
they were all right.
Oh yeah, they was trying to take people's money and
I want you to send me a message and send me your email.
I emailed you earlier. We talked on Facebook this morning.
Oh, okay, you're the one who did that. Okay, fine. Yeah.
Okay,
like
when I asked the question to him, he started cussing me out. So like, hey, what's the status of your project? And I got cussed out. But, you know, that's a sign of whoa. Or he offered
when you put pressure on, you find out what people really are when you put pressure on them.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I'll say about that. Here's what I want you to do here, okay, man? You're not
–
first of all, I just want to make an observation.
Go ahead.
Do you notice how – and I there's no nice way to say this, so I'll just say this. I'm a black authority, not the nice authority.
Say it.
Do you all ever notice how the pathology of people in prison – is very simple. The way that they run prison and the pathology and mechanisms and structure of prison is so similar to the military.
Yes, I would not disagree with you on that. I wouldn't even take offense to it.
And have you ever noticed that the two groups of people who have the most tattoos are people who've been in prison and people who've been in the military?
Yes. Although I have none, believe it or not. I have none.
I don't have any either. But I just thought that was a very interesting observation, is that the structure of prison and the structure of the military is so similar. That was an observation about that I just wanted to make right there. And
I will tell you the reason why it is because, you know, especially a lot of these folks or these young men and women join the military because they have no structure. They're lost. They're walking around dazed. That's why they have a lot of, you know, when you start looking at statistics, they have a lot of young black men and women that join within the enlisted ranks. But the numbers for, like, black officers are so minute, you know. They don't, you know.
Isn't
it
amazing?
Tell you,
isn't that amazing how you can be 70% of boot camp, but you're only 5% of the officers? Isn't that amazing?
Right. Yeah. And then they even play the games now where, and I'm not taking anything from my black women, but it's kind of, hey, look who this is our first black female admiral who's the CNO, blah, 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 you know. And I'm like, where are the black males at, you know? But they'll say commercials.
Don't say anything. Wait a minute now. Let me stop you here, because sometimes people get a little too free on the phones here. I don't want you to say anything you can get yourself in trouble with.
I won't.
Yeah, because if they cut your pension, I'm not going to be there to pay it. So just
That's already happening, brother. That's already being
put on
the
topic.
You
end up on Navy NCIS. I don't want you sitting there saying, well, TBA, I mean, I can say this, but wait, hold on. I'm not contributing to the defense fund or anything, so don't say anything you get in trouble with. But I understand what you're saying about that. And they put these figureheads out there, and they leave black people chasing figureheads till the end of time.
Exactly. And I think what I've done from my experiences, first of all, I'm ready because I wasn't born in the United States. I was born in London, and then I moved here. And my mother always told me, you know, these American black people are very different. And growing up in South Florida, it was very evident to me that their mindset was different. I kind of had a different upbringing to always be work hard or whatever, and education was important. But a lot of these folks that I, you know, saw and grew up and see in the military throughout this time, they have no direction. They don't have anybody to say, hey, you know, get yourself together. This is what we need to do. And, like, listening to your broadcast the last couple weeks and hearing what's going on, like, in Chicago, Detroit, New York, and all these other, Philadelphia, all these other places, and I'm like, okay, when are my brothers and sisters going to get it together and realize, like, hey, you're being forced out? I believe, like, people say they're forcing you out of the cities to put you in the suburb. I'm like, man, it sounds like they're herding you up like cattle to stick you on a reservation like they do the natives and send you out of everything. That's how I feel is the end game, and let you just kill each other off. That's how I feel is going to happen if we don't get it together and start investing in ourselves.
Brother, understand something. It's not going to happen. It's already happening.
Yeah, you're right.
It's just happening very, very slowly. Let me explain something to you. The way that American genocide works, we have this idea in our heads of the old Nazi system or Saddam Hussein or what like that. That's not the way that American genocide works. American genocide does not work to the number zero. And that's the thing that we keep missing, is that we're waiting for the brown shirts to show up. What I've been screaming through this microphone for half decade and online for a decade into the world for over 20 years is that's not the way this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle Alexander wrote the book, The New Jim Crow, that you know that's not just a prison. That is the way that it's worked, that Jim Crow works now.
Yeah.
It didn't go away. It looks like that's what they turned it into. And we're waiting for this. We think that Jim Crow is a plantation, and it's not. It's a prison rec yard. It's a courtroom where white males get a third of the sentence of black males because they were dealing powder cocaine and not crack cocaine, and your first black somewhat president hasn't done a damn thing to change it.
Right.
That is what Jim Crow looks like, and genocide does not look like zero black people. It can be 10 black people. It could be 100 black people. It could be 100,000 black people. Hell, you can be the majority. You just have no power, wealth, or control. So it doesn't matter if there's zero or a million and zero. Your numbers are worthless. Do you know what's really being instituted? Go and look at South Africa, where white people are 10% of the population, and yet they have 90% of the power, wealth, and influence. So it doesn't matter about your, and that is genocide. Your numbers don't matter.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And once again, seeing that you brought up South Africa, okay, they ride off the Nelson Mandela, Madiba, but you guys are not empowered. You don't control anything. Yes, he was the president at a time, but that didn't empower you to control South Africa. You still had, as you said, you still had the white people controlling South Africa. It is the same situation that happens here, okay? You have a black president, but, A, he has not done anything for you. As a matter of fact, I was reading Dr. Claude Anderson's book, Black Labor, White Wealth, and I had it at work. It was in my bag, and I set it on my desk, okay? And I was talking to my executive officer and my command master chief, you know, and he looked at the book. They're both white, and he looked at the book, okay? He just saw the cover while I was having the discussion with him. She walks away, and he picks up the book. He goes, "Is this a racist book?" I was like, "No, it's not a racist book. Can you read the title, please?" You know, and he's like, "Well, what is it?" I said, "Maybe you should read it." Okay, there's nothing racist about it. Okay. Oh well, I mean, are you saying that things are not equal in this country? You have a black president. I mean, you guys are doing better than the Indians. I was like, "Why are you getting so defensive?" I didn't say anything to you. Why? And I'm like,
because you weren't talking about panties.
Thank you.
Black people need to understand something. This is what I was saying about. White people understand and will acknowledge and recognize racism quicker than we will, because we don't understand that the dominant culture knows when you're not talking the way they taught you to. They know when you are speaking the language of empowerment, and their ears immediately go up. It's like that scene from the Animatrix, you know, when the agent said, you know, "We've got one down." Was that world record? And when they saw that the track star was waking up, and they were like, "We've got one. Do not let him wake up." Their ears go up immediately. We know that this guy is different. He's not talking the way we taught him. He's speaking differently. Brother, look at books like Black Labor, White Wealth, the same way that Frederick Douglass's slave masters looked at the Bible and learning how to read it. They look at it exactly the same. They know when you are speaking a language of empowerment that has nothing to do with them. You are talking about power, wealth, and influence that they did not approve and did not give to you. They know when you're talking like that. And that the first thing they're going to try to do is make it clear to you that, now you know this isn't approved. You wouldn't want us to be displeased, would you? Do you people always worry about whether or not we please you, or whether or not you please us, or we're pleased with you? Well, you know we're displeased by this. And then they check to see, are you going to react the other way, which is fear.
Yeah.
That if they're not pleased with you, you're supposed to immediately be afraid. Don't you know that we do things to you? You can't do nothing to us if you're displeased. But don't you know we are so much as unhappy that things can happen to you? And then they check to see if you're going to react that way. And if you don't react either way, get Katie Barr the door, because here it comes.
You're absolutely right. It just amazed me how quickly defensive
that he got and was like, well, you got a black president, and tried to convince me that the Indians were treated worse than black people. I just kind of looked at him quizzically like, really? All right, if that's what you believe, but that's not the case, and I'm not going to try to argue
that
with you.
He does not believe that any – he doesn't believe that any more than any other person that I've debated and I've destroyed them all. Ask Derek Brose. He doesn't believe that any more than Derek Brose did.
Exactly.
The real thanks for breaking down your defenses. The only thing that he did not ask you was what he really wanted to ask you. Why do you need power, wealth, and influence?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you need that? What are you going to do with that? Haven't we given you a nice job here? Dr. John Henry Clark said it, and it's still true today, the wisdom of the ages, when he said that what they have done is that they have created a system whereby which you can gain their complete and total approval so long as you are willing to accept second place and you reserve first place for them. You will not be assaulted. You will not suffer police brutality. You will not be, quote, discriminated against. You can have the car you want, the house you want, the job you want, as long as it is the high position is number two. You can never desire to be number one. As long
so
as you accept
it,
the number two. Now, understand, number two means that who creates the position of number one? Whoever is the strongest. Well, who creates the position of number two? Number one does. Number one created number two. But who created number one? Number one creates himself. Number two is created by number one, and number one creates himself. And what they want you to do is accept number two. As long as you will do that, you're cool with us. You start talking about being number one, now we got trouble. I'll let you have a word, brother.
Thank you very much for enlightening me there with that last part that you just gave me, because what you basically broke down is that's the carrot that they dangle in front of a lot of our faces to say, no, you know, they could even put you in a position of being, hey, I could put you head of HR and I'll pay you $120,000 when the CEO makes $1.2 million, you know, and we're supposed to be appeased by that. It's the same thing that they put in front of the faces of these pro athletes. They dangle the carrot of a high contract, which pales in comparisons to the billions of dollars that they bring in from revenue and the TV contracts while these brothers are out there playing these sports. You know, like I just said, I just came from the NCAA tournament where, you know, these young black kids are out there playing and nothing but white folks were in the stands, older white folks. You know,
and the folks, they're out there playing and making money, billions of dollars for the NCAA. Billions.
Right.
And
billions.
They're not seeing a dime of it.
Right.
They're not seeing a dime. You accepted number two. They sit up here and got these kids out there, and they got them in video games and all this stuff, and you're making no money off of it. Isn't that amazing? That's what you ultimately end up with. And I want you all to remember that from this phone call. That is what you ultimately end up with when you accept the position of number two. We don't have to annihilate you all down to the last man, woman, and child. And what you saw in that basketball court is not only do we need to do it, we probably don't even want to do it. Why not have you up and down the field for us? We're keeping all the money. Why would I not keep you here? And I will pass on all the wealth that you have created to my son. And he won't be on the field either. Congratulations. You're the most dominant college basketball players ever. And my son is filthy rich, and you are filthy.
Okay.
And that's the manner in which it works. Thank you very much for checking in with us, brother. We definitely do appreciate that. I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up right now. Mona, I want to thank you for staying on the line with us. I think one of these days I'm just going to hijack you just all together. I have to be careful because I may be admitting to a crime here. Because if she comes up missing after the broadcast, OMG. I shouldn't say things like that because She comes up missing, and I guarantee I'm going to get a phone call. There's a bunch of haters will be on Facebook. You know he says he's going to steal her. He says he's going to kidnap her. You know he means it. And nobody's ever seen him, so we don't even know who to put the APB on. I can see it now.
I just want to say thank you for having me on. And if I could just add one thing to what the gentleman just said, not only do white people understand it, but black people understand it as well. And when they see you trying to empower yourself, they look at you as like you're the rebellious slave and that you're going to cause trouble, and they try to remove themselves from you, and that's very tragic. And I just want to say thank you. I always enjoy listening to you and joining you on your mission.
Well, we'll be doing it again tomorrow night, so definitely thank you for joining us, sister. And she's right. I mean, they see you as the rebellious slave because you are. Because you are. And that's exactly the way they see you. You are the one who's not listening. We told you what your position is, and you're not listening. You're not listening. Gotta do something about that. Understand something. The power comes down on you once you start forgetting. Once you start forgetting that you're supposed to be number two, and once you start looking at number one. Well, guess what? They say that you're a troublemaker. If you want that number one slot, the first thing that they're going to do is say you're a troublemaker. You cause problems. You don't listen. And that is exactly what I want all of you to become. I want you to become troublemakers. I want you all to be troublemakers. I want you to get your money and your finances and your economics and your enterprise going, and let's start making trouble all over this damn place. That's exactly what I want. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio, where we'll be doing this again tomorrow night. Same black time, same black channel. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, my brothers and my sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future, and the future as compromising.